From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Smokey Mulder, call me Tony in a pitch battle down the stretch here. Smokey Mulder fighting his way to a short lead. Smokey Mulder in front. Call me Tony fights him hard all the way down to the line. But at the finish, it's going to be Smokey Mulder.
Charmin Ghost is drifting out a little bit while giving chase. It's Midnight Storm. Charmin Ghost out towards the middle of the track. It's Charmin Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile. Charmin Ghost has beaten Midnight Storm.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Zombie is talking them in between runners. Big guy Ian, Google Ado, scrutinizer there too. Zombie drops in for a stretch drive with Google Ado. Scrutinizer is back to third. And here is Zombie. And Terry Thompson goes on to clear and win. Zombie.
Ghost Zephyr has now shrugged off Roses in May. Presently Perfect continues to rally down the center of the track. Azuri doing her best, but she's now fifth. In between horses, Perfect Drift. Ghost Zephyr kicking clear. And Ghost Zephyr is pulling away impressively.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Hello again, everyone. Good morning. Happy Halloween weekend. Fantastic open. Some great, spooky, Halloweenish horse names there. Welcome to the show that launched a network. This is the Equine Forum, and it's all presented by Woodbine Entertainment right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have you with me for the next 3 hours, right up until 11 a.m. Eastern. The 38th Breeders' Cup World Championships are now only 6 days, 9 hours, and 48 minutes away. Pre-entries have been out there now for almost 72 hours. 196 horses were pre-entered on Monday, including a record 56 international runners. That's impressive. 26 from Great Britain. You had 17 from Ireland. We'll see 8 from Japan. 2 from France, 1 from Argentina, 1 from Peru, and 1 from South Africa. That's why it is the Breeders' Cup World Championships. And that is the biggest challenge facing those of us who plan to be betting the races next Friday and Saturday. What do you do with the foreign horses? How good is their form, really? Was the competition they were facing better than their North American-based rivals? Will they like the firmer ground they're going to get at Del Mar? The only time the Breeders' Cup was held at Del Mar in 2017, the internationally based runners had no problem taking it to the Americans. Talismanic upset the Breeders' Cup turf, paying $30.20 for the win. Wujeda scored at 11-1 in the Philly and Mare turf, and Mendelssohn won the juvenile turf. He was the favorite at a juicy 9-2. American-based runners did take the other three turf races, but a 50% win rate for the Euros is impressive. So I think they answered some of those questions the last time the Breeders' Cup was at Del Mar. Yeah, they handled the firm turf. Yeah, the competition they were facing was good. Now, this is a whole new group. Whole new kettle of fish. We'll see how they handle it. But, you know, the prices on those European winners were also impressive. And again, those were in races which the Europeans have traditionally done really well. The Breeders' Cup turf, the Filly and Mare turf, the juvenile turf. And yet you still got good prices. And that's something that every horse player, as you're getting ready for the Breeders' Cup next week, should take note going into this year's event. With that said, I'm going to take a big chunk of the guesswork out of the equation for you here this morning. And if you're tuned in and you have friends that are going to be betting the races and for some reason they are not listening to this show, don't ask me why, but if they're not listening right now, get on the phone and call them. Send them a text, because at 8:40 Eastern, Max Pimlott, who is with the International Racing Bureau and has kept a close eye on the international runners throughout the entire year, is going to be joining me right here on the Equine Forum. And if you're planning on betting the Breeders' Cup, today's show and Max's segment is must-listen radio. So if you have friends who aren't tuned in right now, get a hold of them and tell them, hey, 8:40 Eastern, Max Pimlott. He's going to tell you everything you need to know about the European runners coming up in this year's Breeders' Cup. In addition to Max, I'm going to welcome North America's all-time leading trainer, Steve Asmussen, to the show. He'll go down the road to the Breeders' Cup with me at 9:35 Eastern. Steve has six pre-entered runners, and he is going to walk through each and every one of them later in the show. And one thing I'm going to bring up is the pattern of his only Friday starter, Echo Zulu, who is going to run in the Juvenile Fillies, and the incredible similarities there with his only other Juvenile Fillies winner. This is the 10-year anniversary of that win. It was My Miss Aurelia who won the Juvenile Fillies in 2011 for Steve. My Miss Aurelia broke her maiden at first asking in the Saratoga meet that year, very early in the Saratoga meet. After the maiden win, she then won the Adirondack at Saratoga before going wire to wire in the Grade 1 Frisette at Belmont, winning by 5.5 lengths. Echo Zulu broke her maiden at first asking early in the Saratoga meet this year, then won the Spinaway, not the Adirondack, but the Spinaway, and dominated the Grade 1 Frisette in wire-to-wire fashion, winning by 7.25 lengths in her final start before the Breeders' Cup. So there are some incredible similarities there. And Echo Zulu, I don't know if she'll go favored in there. I have to think she probably will be no worse than, what, third? Gosh, she's got to be the favorite in there. She's just been so brilliant. But regardless, she comes in with the very same pattern that My Miss Aurelia came in with in 2011. Steve also got his second Breeders' Cup Classic win when the Breeders' Cup was held at Del Mar in 2017. That was with Gunrunner, and he's hoping that Max Player can give him number three next Saturday, and I'm going to talk to him about Max Player's chances as well. We'll talk about all six of the horses he pre-entered. That comes up later in the program, 9:40 Eastern, 9:35 Eastern time is when I'll welcome Steve to the show. Keeneland puts a bow on their fall meet later today here in Lexington, which means that the 21-day fall meet at Churchill Downs is going to begin tomorrow with the first of two Stars of Tomorrow programs featuring all two-year-olds. It's such a cool concept. I think they've been doing it now, 17 years maybe? All two-year-old races. It's an 11-race card. There are two stakes races. You have the Rags to Riches for the two-year-old fillies, and you have the Street Sense for the two-year-old boys. And it is a great betting card. You want to find some value. We talk about the Breeders' Cup and all the value you're going to get in the Breeders' Cup races. This is a different, kind of the opposite end of the spectrum, right? You have horses, two-year-olds, that are just getting started with their career. They could turn out to be any kind. Hope springs eternal. And many of them are trying things for the first time. Maybe they're making their first start. So you get a chance to jump on these horses now before they really make their mark in racing. And it gives you an opportunity to get great value. Churchill Director of Communications Darren Rogers is going to preview opening day, and he'll look ahead to the rest of the meet with me as I kick off today's guest lineup in just a few minutes, right around 8:15 Eastern. I'm also going to spend time telling you about a great way to get involved with helping some amazing industry charities. And that's one thing about the horse racing industry. Man, do we give back. We love to support, and it's a wonderful thing, so many industry charities that do wonderful work, some you never even really hear about, but they do great work under the radar, behind the scenes. And Fanticipate is going to be auctioning off several really cool racing items. They'll do it online, and it comes up this coming week. And I'm going to be joined by Elizabeth Ovalman at 9 Eastern to give you all the details of that upcoming auction. It benefits Breeders' Cup charities, which also include, by the way, PDJF, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund, the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network. At 9:20, it is this week's edition of Unsung Heroes, presented by Claiborne. I'm going to recognize longtime Stone Street yearling manager Robert Turner in that segment. It's one that you will not want to miss. Hour 3 begins at 10 a.m. Eastern with In the Room with Sean Clancy. Sean will sit down with retired jockey term film director. This is really cool. Nathan Horrocks. That should be a lot of fun at 10 Eastern. Kurt Becker takes you on his stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland at 10:25. And at 10:30, I will be joined by trainer Dale Romans and turf rider Tim Wilkin in a special Halloween weekend edition of I Ask, They Answer. That is going to be fun. We'll tackle a couple of more serious racing topics, and then we'll have a little Halloween fun in that segment at 10:30 Eastern toward the end of the show today. Question of the day. You can go to at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook to let me know your thoughts. If you don't do social media, simply email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. And let me know, what is your favorite Halloween-themed horse name? You heard some in the open there. Spooky Mulder, Ghost Zapper, Zombie. There's plenty of pumpkin ones out there, too. What is your favorite Halloween-themed horse name? I'll read those responses as we move throughout the show. At HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook is where you can let me know your thoughts. And again, if you don't do social media, email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. All right, when I come back, I'm going to welcome in Darren Rogers. We'll look ahead to that Churchill Fall Meet, which begins tomorrow. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times at 12:55 Eastern and a Friday post time of 4:45 Eastern. Don't forget, on March 13th, we have the Grade 3 Maple Leaf Stakes for fillies and mares, and on the 14th, the Grade 2 Autumn Stakes for three-year-olds and up. With racing now through December 4th and plenty of weekend stakes, you are not going to want to miss out on the action at Woodbine. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com.
Racing fans, don't miss closing weekend this Saturday and Sunday at Spectacular Santa Anita. On Saturday, we'll have the Grade 3 Autumn Mistakes, and on Sunday, we'll have the Grade 2 $200,000 Twilight Derby. And if there is no single ticket winner in Saturday's 20-cent Rainbow Pick 6 jackpot, Sunday's mandatory payout pool could approach $5 million. If you play Sunday's Rainbow 6 via First Bet or Express Bet, you'll get a free $10 bet, and you can also download free past performances of Sunday's card at santaanita.com. And be sure to make plans to watch and wager on the two-day Breeders' Cup World Championships from Del Mar next Friday and Saturday right here at Santa Anita. Walk-up admission is free and no reservations are required. Admission to our Front Runner restaurant is $5. Simulcast wagering from Del Mar begins Wednesday, November 3rd. First post time this Saturday and Sunday is at 12:30.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
I'm here with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, how do you value a horse for insurance?
Well, Mike, it's easy to value a horse when purchased out of a public auction. The insured value would simply be the auction price. But insuring homebreds can be a little more involved.
How so?
Well, factors such as a stud fee, confirmation, pedigree, sales and race records of siblings, even popularity of the stallion all come into play.
How closely do you work with owners in determining a horse's value?
Well, the owner has a pretty good idea of the horse's value, so generally it's just a matter of agreeing to the request and having the policy issued.
For all your equine and general insurance needs, including farm owners, liability, homeowners, auto, and more, contact Joe Brown Nicholson at NicholsonInsurance.com or call 859-224-7080. That's 859-224-7080. Nicholson Insurance Agency.
Hi, this is Chris McCarron, and you're listening to the best horse racing show on the radio on Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
They race now inside the final 2.5 furlongs of the Clark Handicap, and now striking for home, it is Mission Impossible. To the outside, Wise Dan is in second. The inside, Will's Wildcat, is now back in third. Flat out, an all-out drive staying on in fourth, followed by Ruler on Ice. Down the outside, Mr. Mardi Gras inside the final furlong now, and it is Wise Dan and John Velasquez who go to a lead of 2 lengths inside the final 16th. It is Wise Dan clearing away to take the Clark Handicap. Wise Dan wins.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna with you on this Saturday morning. That was Mark Johnson with the call of the 2011 Clark. 10 years ago, Wise Dan won the Clark on the main track. Let me say that again. Wise Dan won the Clark on the main track. We think of Wise Dan as the fantastic turf horse that he was, the Hall of Famer. 23 wins from 31 lifetime starts, $7.5 million in career earnings. But you forget how good Wise Dan was, not just on turf, but on the main track too. A grade one winner there. Yeah, really spectacular. The Clark is part of a 21-day meet at Churchill Downs that begins tomorrow, and the meet is loaded with quality. And of course, it opens tomorrow with their Falls, their Stars of Tomorrow 1 program. They're going to do this a couple of times, all 2-year-olds, and somebody who has been working tirelessly on getting everything organized for the meet is Darren Rogers. He's the director of communication. He is with me now, and this interview presented by our friends at Jellyfish Water. Darren, good morning, my friend.
Hey, good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good, good. You know, I started going back through some of the past Clark Handicap winners, and, you know, I too sometimes forget how good Wise Dan was on the main track. That was incredible.
Wise Dan was awesome. One of my favorite horses of all time. Charlie Lopresti did such a wonderful job with him, you know, and his offspring, some siblings as well. Successful Dan was very good. Wise Dan was so awesome. I'll never forget that the old firecracker, which is now named after Wise Dan, in the driving rain at a mile on turf. He was absolutely one of the best horses this century. He was very, very good.
Yeah, a Hall of Famer on both the dirt and the turf. He's so versatile. I guess you could say Wise Dan was all racehorse, right?
Yeah, he was hickory.
Yeah, very hickory. Hickory. I love that word. Yeah, that's a great word to describe Wise Dan. Look, there are some horses that are going to be running tomorrow on opening day, some youngsters that are hoping they'll turn out to be hickory later in their careers too. And what a way to kick it off. I was reading your press release, Darren. I couldn't believe that Stars of Tomorrow, and that program has been going on now for 17 years.
Yeah, the late Donnie Richardson started it back in 2005. And there are so many 2-year-olds back here. In fact, I've been telling Ben Huffman, who's now our vice president of racing and racing secretary, I think we need to have a third one in September. I mean, there's just 26% of the 222 races that we're going to run this fall over the next 4 weeks, are carded for 2-year-olds. So, anytime you have a good 2-year-old in the barn, there's always hope. And this Stars of Tomorrow program has helped launch the careers of, I can't even keep track of the number of graded stakes winners, but it's included more than 50 future grade one winners down the line. I mean, the roster includes the Horse of the Year champions, Gunrunner and Rachel Alexandra. You have the Kentucky Derby winner, Super Saver. Oaks winners, Rachel Alexandra, Believe You Can, Monomoy Girl. The Preakness winners, Shackleford, War of Will, and Swiss Skydiver. And then the Belmont Stakes winner, Creator. So, and just take a look. Let's look at last year. The class of participants included graded stakes winners, Army Wife, Clarier, King Fury, Mandaloon, Superstock, Travel Column, and Will Secret.
Wow.
So this truly is the next, it's a showcase of the true stars of tomorrow, and we're looking forward to it. 11 races that kicks off the 21-day fall meet on Sunday at 1 o'clock Eastern, and it should be a great meet.
You know, it's just a shame that the purses for those maiden races are so poor, though, huh?
Yeah, I mean, $120,000 for a maiden special weight. I mean, think about that. All told,
ridiculous.
I said we've got 222 races that are carded. There's 22.2 million dollars offered in the first or the only fall meet condition book. Do the math. That works out to be an average of about $100,000 a race, and it's really, thanks to the money fueled from the historical racing machines, it's really strengthened the purse accounts for Churchill Downs. You look at Turfway Park, that's going to follow us. Their maiden races are going to start out at about $60,000, so. The Kentucky Circuit is really the place to be. Horsemen are recognizing that, and that's good for horse players because, anytime you have money, the horsemen follow, the owners follow, and that means large field sizes. And I would expect that during this fall meet. Remember, it's only going to be exclusively on dirt throughout the fall. Earlier this month, we laid the new $10 million turf course, and we're we're watering it aggressively. Mother Nature's helping out, and we're letting the roots take hold, and turf racing will resume next spring for the spring meet on Derby Week. And it's a more robust turf course, Bermuda grass. It's overseeded with rye. It's widened to 85 feet to allow more racing lanes. We'll have four racing lanes, and the turns are banked. So each one of those lanes will allow us to have 14 horses per race. So that's going to be great. That'll be ready next spring. So get your dirt racing handicapping ready this fall.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. Talking with Darren Rogers, the Director of Communications at Churchill Downs. It is opening day tomorrow, and it's a meet that not only features two Stars of Tomorrow programs, but Darren, you get later in the meet and you start looking at races like the Clark and so many top races that we'll see later in the fall. Kind of look ahead to the rest of the meet, and then we'll come back to what's going to happen tomorrow. Tell me what folks can expect.
Well, I mean, the stakes schedule, first of all, it's always anchored by the Clark, which is presented by Norton Healthcare, and it's $750,000 this year. Of course, Midnight Bourbon, who was the Preakness, the Travers, and Pennsylvania Derby runner-up, is going to be facing Maxfield, who won the Ali Sheba and the Stephen Foster. They're among the top three-year-olds and up targeting that mile-length test. Dr. Post, I know, for Todd Pletcher, is also under consideration for that race. So that's going to be shaping up as a good program. The Clark, it's one of six stakes races on that Thanksgiving weekend, which on Thanksgiving Day, it's annually featuring the Fall City for fillies and mares at a mile and eighth. That's worth $500,000 now. Bonnie South for Brad Cox. She was the winner of this year's Double Dog Dare and the runner-up in a multiple grade ones in New York. She's going to be the headliner. Could possibly, I'm curious to see if she ran second last year to En Boutant in the Fall City and Kenny McPeak's En Boutant. I wouldn't be surprised if she made one last run in there to defend her title. Earlier in the meet, I think, around here, there's been quite a sprinting rivalry. They've both decided to bypass the filly and mare sprint against Gamin because the Dream Supreme is worth $300,000 out of their own backyard, six furlongs on Saturday, November the 13th, the week after the Breeders' Cup. And you're going to see Bell's the One tackle Sconson once again. Sconson, of course, won the winning colors in Open Mind. Bell's the One. She won the Rock Solana, the Honorable Miss, and the PCA at Keeneland recently. So those are just some of the stars that are marquee type horses they're going to be tackling this stakes schedule. 11 stakes on tap, $3.75 million up for grabs. The lowest stakes race, $200,000.
Wow. Yeah, and there are two of those coming up tomorrow with the Rags to Riches and the Street Sense. Both of those, again, for the two-year-olds. The Rags to Riches for the two-year-old fillies, the Street Sense for the two-year-old boys. Which horses on tomorrow's opening day program are you going to be looking forward to? Well, I mean, obviously all of them, Darren, but which ones in particular are you going to be paying attention to?
Wow, that's a great, great question. There's so many well-bred horses on here to zero in on. There's one in the last race, Ain't Broke, for Brett Calhoun, 8-1 on the line. Ray Gutierrez is up. If you put up Ray Gutierrez, probably means you're going to get an aggressive ride out of the gate. The dam has three winners from three starters and one stakes winner. And that family is producing some real horse. I forgot the horse's name that he's have to. It's Mr. Wireless.
Okay.
For Brett Calhoun is who it's related to. I'm curious and kind of zeroed in on that one. There's a horse, my colleague Kevin Kirstein, who is our publicity manager. He gets out there early in the morning. Loves watching all the horses train. And in the seventh race, we're going to need a little help with defections in that seventh race because the horse landed as the lone also eligible. But Cyberknife for Brad Cox is a son of Gunrunner who's been tipping his hand to Kevin Kirstein in the mornings, and he thinks that horse could be one of our next stars of tomorrow.
Yeah, Kevin Kirstein, fantastic. You can follow him on Twitter, too. I was retweeting this morning through our HRN account some of the different workout videos that he posts, and he does a great job with that. It's Horse Racing KK if you want to follow Kevin and keep up with the latest on so many of the horses at Churchill Downs. He does it every single morning. And, Darren, you also
He's the best. He's the machine. He's an absolute machine.
He's incredible.
Yes.
Yeah. He's incredible. And you sent out a tweet that I retweeted. I think it's important that people know that that for the entire fall meet, Churchill Downs, courtesy of BrisNet, is offering free pass performances, which I think is fantastic.
Yeah, we've done that before in the past. We think it's a great thing to offer up the information for free. You know, if you're not in the area, you can always watch the races on, you know, America's Day at the Races. You know, in conjunction with the NYRA telecast. You know, during the fall, it gets a little more challenging because there's so many other sporting events, college football, even college basketball kicking up, that there are scheduling conflicts. If you like to stream and you're used to using a smart TV, you can, you know, get it via, you know, Roku, Amazon, Apple TV, search for the Churchill Downs live app and look for the, you know, you got to use, look for the word live in all caps, Churchill Downs live. And that gives you a full access to the live stream of the Churchill Downs simulcast signal. And plus, I guess you get some, you know, three additional angles. You got the saddling paddock and it's free of charge, free of charge. So you can watch that live stream of Churchill Downs. Get, you know, Joe Christofek as our host, Scott Shapiro is an excellent handicapper, James Scully, Brandon Staubel, they'll be bringing you the action as well. So I encourage those people outside the area to enjoy that experience watching on your big screen at home.
In the final segment of the show, we started this several weeks ago now, Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin join me for a segment called I Ask, They Answer, and I pose questions, some coming from our listeners, some coming from hot topics in the industry, and they weigh in on those different topics, Darren. And Dale, last week, started touting a horse that he was going to run on Halloween. He said is the greatest hunch play for Halloween of all time, and that is number 6, Howling Time, who goes in the Street Sense. The dam of Howling Time is Werewolf. And he said this has to be the hunch play of the century for Halloween.
Well, I will definitely keep an eye on Dale Romans. He's really picked it up, by the way. I think he's got, you know, the barn got hot in September, started to heat off. It wasn't the most ideal start for the first half of the year for Dale, but his horses are running, and we'll keep an eye on Howling Time with Joe Talamo up in the Street Sense. The Street Sense goes as the 10th race, the Rags to Riches, a more compact field that goes as race number 5.
Yeah, well, it's going to be a great card tomorrow, going to be a wonderful meet, and so many things to look forward to. Darren, I really appreciate you spending some time to lay it all out for people and enjoy it. Just for the record, 189 days, 10 hours, 14 minutes, and 54 seconds until the Run for the Roses next year.
Tick, 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 tock.
You had that clock in your head already. I know you did.
Oh yeah, I'm like an old Eddie Delahousse, just timing it perfectly to finish in front at the wire by a neck.
Darren, appreciate it, buddy. Enjoy the weekend.
All right, have a great Breeders' Cup, Mike. Thanks for the invite.
Thanks, appreciate it. Darren Rogers, Director of Communications. Nobody better. He's fantastic, and yeah, it's going to be one heck of a meet. The purse is ridiculous. Come on, $120,000 maiden races. Where else would you want to run? It's a good time to be an owner in thoroughbred racing if you're going to be running here in Kentucky. Well, that interview brought to you by our friends at Jellyfish Water. Remember, whatever your day brings at the track or in life, you can reach for a bottle of Jellyfish Water to refresh, reset, and rejoice. Jellyfish Water is the start of a new day, the recovery from a long day, and the mindset to succeed every day. Life begins with water. Success begins with you. Find your case of inspiration at jellyfishwater.com. In deference to our special guest coming up next, Max Pimlott, want to spend a lot of time with Max from the International Racing Bureau walking through the international runners who have pre-entered into the Breeders' Cup. We're going to bypass our Lexus Legends of the Turf story on this Saturday morning. Want to make sure we stay on time. We will bring you the Lexus commercial telling you about the great folks at Lexus of Lexington. And I'll come back, get you ready to bet the races with today's first bet, and then welcome in Max Pimlott. Stay with me. This is the Equine Forum. Visionary design, visceral performance, and innovative technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience driving any Lexus model is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for over 15 years. Experience the enjoyment of Lexus and the enjoyment of shopping Lexus of Lexington. The people there truly make the difference. Long-tenured, friendly, knowledgeable team members, no pressure, no hassle. I promise, it's not your typical dealership experience. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, and Lexus of Lexington continues to sponsor Keeneland's Raven Run Stakes each fall. So from one horse person to another, the next best thing to being around horses is driving a Lexus. Visit Lexus of Lexington and tell them Mike sent you.
Live racing is back at Churchill Downs October 31st through November 28th with the same strong purses we've had all year, and you are not going to want to miss it. Highlighted by the graded stakes such as the Grade 3 Chalukey, the Grade 2 Falls City, Grade 2 Kentucky Jockey Club, and the Grade 2 Goldenrod, along with the Grade 1 Clark, this November meet is sure to be full of excitement. For more racing information and to get your tickets today, visit ChurchillDowns.com. That's ChurchillDowns.com.
Coming this November, it's the America's Best Racing Fan Choice Awards. Covering the best of the sport and lifestyle, all decided by the fans. Here's your chance to vote. The America's Best Racing Fan Choice Awards.
The moment we've all been waiting for is here. Racing returns to Keeneland for the fall meet, October 8th through the 30th. And tickets are now available online for pre-purchase. Place your bets during the fall meet anywhere, anytime from your phone with Keeneland Select. New accounts receive $100 back when you wager $200 on the fall meet. Plus, the standard $100 sign-up bonus. And Keeneland Select members receive free admission to Keeneland. Sign up to wager at KeenelandSelect.com.
This is HRRN, your exclusive home for the Breeders' Cup World Championships. You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Talismanic rides the rail as Oscar Performance is taken on by Beach Patrol at the top of the stretch. They're into the stretch and Beach Patrol takes the lead. Talismanic running well. Island Reel to the outside. Oh, Talismanic's going to take the lead here. Talismanic, Island Reel, and Beach Patrol coming down to the line. Talismanic, Beach Patrol fights on Island Reel. Talismanic is the winner. Beach Patrol second and Highland Reel was third in the Breeders' Cup Turf.
That's the way it sounded from NBC's Larry Colmus the last time the Breeders' Cup was at Del Mar, the only other time. That was in 2017, and Talismanic upsetting the Breeders' Cup Turf, $30 for the win. He was one of three European runners to beat the Americans on that day. Now, the Americans won the other three turf races, so it's a 50-50 split. Pretty good. The Europeans handled the surf as well. And coming up in just a minute, I'm going to talk with Max Pimlott from the International Racing Bureau, and we'll find out who Max thinks might be the horses to handle that Del Mar surface that are coming from overseas. I'll talk to him coming up momentarily, but first it's time to get you ready to bet the races today with our friends at First Bet.
And now, today's First Bet.
Today's first bet comes in race 9 at Keeneland, the grade 2 $200,000 Fayette, which is set for a mile and an eighth on the main track at 5:16 Eastern. Number 7, Code of Honor, is 3-1 on the morning line, has a 32% win projection from first bet, ranks 15 points higher than his next closest rival, and is top rated in 6 of the 12 most important first bet handicapping factors for the Fayette. He can top $3 million in career earnings with a win later today, and Code of Honor will be making his first appearance at Keeneland, but he will pair with the fall meets runaway leading rider Tyler Gaffalione, who rode him in the Pegasus World Cup. It is number 7, Code of Honor, in race 9 at Keeneland, who is today's first bet. I'm back with more in 60 seconds right after this word from First Bet.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number 1, st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
The Breeders' Cup coming up in just 6 days. We will be there as your exclusive radio home for the Breeders' Cup World Championships, 15 years running. Very proud to be able to say that. The only place you'll hear the Breeders' Cup on radio is right here with our Eclipse Award-winning team. And you can visit our website, horseracingradio.net, for a complete schedule. Actually, the coverage begins on Tuesday, live from Del Mar, the first of three Breeders' Cup countdown shows presented by Hillendale Farms. And Bobby Newman, Jude Feld will be live from Del Mar. Interviews with owners, trainers, breeders, handicappers to get you ready for the races. And then, of course, we'll have the coverage of every race Friday and Saturday afternoon. That schedule posted at horseracingradio.net. Well, time now to welcome in Max Pimlott, who is with the International Racing Bureau. I told you that one of the true puzzles associated with handicapping Breeders' Cup is trying to figure out what to do with the European runners. Well, Max has been doing this a long time. He is on top of all the contenders coming from overseas, and he's with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Max, good morning. Thanks for being up early on the West Coast.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Doing very, very well. Really excited to see some of the Euros and see how they stack up with some of the best American competition. I always say that the Breeders' Cup, it kind of has a Ryder Cup type of feel to it, doesn't it?
That's it. It's an amazing event, and it's one which is valued so highly over in Europe, especially in the UK and Ireland, but also in France and a bit further afield. But we all love coming over here. As you say, it is the Ryder Cup concept to a certain extent, and to have some success over here is just a huge achievement. So we're all very much looking forward to it. Our first bunch of horses arrived yesterday afternoon at 4:30 in the afternoon. They looked in great nick, and we're ready to go now.
26 runners from Great Britain, 17 from Ireland, 8 from Japan. You have 2 from France and 1 each from Argentina, Peru, and South Africa. And, Max, I'm not going to claim to have sat here and walked through all of the European runners, 56 international horses that have been pre-entered. So I'm going to throw it to you and say, okay, walk me through some of the biggest names we're going to see and some of the most likely contenders and most likely winners.
Yeah, the best horse we've got coming over is Tanawa. We know a lot about her from winning the British Cup Turf last year. She was very lucky in the Prix de l'Archery last time out. The ground was probably a bit too soft for her. She's our best chance for winner. Would be very disappointed if she was to get beat, basically. Dermot World reports to be in fantastic form, and I think she's our biggest hope for the week. We have got some very, very good horses to back her up, but she's a superstar. She's definitely the best runner we've got here. And then, I suppose, Glass Slippers, we need to focus on her. Very impressive last year in the British Cup Turf Sprint. She's back in great form. This has been the target all year. Kevin Ryan reports she's been in fantastic form at home, and she should take the beating as well, hopefully.
That Breeders' Cup Turf is always a tough one for the Americans because, you know, so many of the Europeans have specialized in grass racing. They specialize in the distance races. And the last time the Breeders' Cup was held at Del Mar, we saw Talismanic win for Godolphin. Godolphin also has a couple of horses that have been pre-entered again into the Breeders' Cup Turf. And going to be interesting to see how all of this unfolds. Max, tell me about some of the other Breeders' Cup Turf contenders that we might see.
Yeah, so Charlie Appleby, as we know, has been flying it all around the world, literally. Excuse the pun. He just can't do anything wrong this year, especially when he comes to America, so definitely have to keep a big eye on his runners. He's got Walton Street and Yabir re-entered in that race. Both William Buick and James Doyle will be travelling. None of their rides have been confirmed yet, so we're just trying to work out what they will be riding during the week. But Charlie's got some great chances. Yabir's been brilliant all year. Walton Street, they've always thought very, very highly of. So whatever they decide to run in the race has to be taken note. But I think Tanawa, she should be winning this, really. Tiona, to be fair, has been a huge improvement throughout the year for Roger Varian. They thought she was a superstar, and she was slightly disappointing at the first part of the season, but she's kept progressing. I think mentally she's improved hugely. She's settled down quite a bit. She's one to definitely take note for next year when she returns back to Europe. And it wouldn't be surprising if she ran a big race, but I just can't get away from Dermot Weld, Philly. I think with a bit of luck in running her, I just don't know which way to see. She should just go and win, you know.
Yeah, you know, you always bet against Aidan O'Brien and Coolmore at your own peril in the Breeders' Cup. And Love is a very talented filly. She comes out of that runner-up effort in a Group 2 at the Curragh back on September 12th. Tell me a little bit more about Love.
Love, so she probably heads Aidan's team this year. It wouldn't be the strongest team Aidan sent over here. To be fair, he hasn't had for his amazing standards, the best of years over back home. But Love, she's got a rating of 118 back in Europe, which obviously is Group 1 class, which we know she is. She ran very well at the Curragh last time out in the Blanford Stakes, finishing second to Philippa T. Coco, beating a short head. Again, very, very strong horse in terms of, you know, goes on any ground as such. And again, you can't rule out any of Aidan's at your peril. She actually beat Ordaria in the Prince of Wales Stakes at Royal Ascot last year. And then we know about Ordaria coming over to the Breeders' Cup of team and winning there. So she's got the form in the book. She's placed in the last three starts. Again, she won at Royal Ascot in the Prince of Wales Stakes. You can't rule her out. Not for me, she's got a little bit to find and a little bit to prove now.
Talking with Max Pimlott, who is with the International Racing Bureau, and he is awaiting some of the Europeans to arrive to Del Mar. He's joining me early on the West Coast. He is at Del Mar right now getting ready for the Breeders' Cup next Friday and Saturday. Max, how about on the youngster side of things with the juvenile turf, the juvenile fillies turf? Are there some youngsters that you think could give the Americans a bit of a run for their money?
definitely, we've got a very, very strong team of juveniles this year. In the turf sprint, we've got Armour, we've got Go Bears Go, Hierarchy, Quick Susie, Twilight Jet, Vertiginous. There's some big challenges there. Again, with them, we've got quite a lot of them. There's no immediate standout. They're all very, very solid and smart performance. Hence the reason why they're travelling here. And I'm sure that a couple of them will pop in. Thing is, this year, as you know, we haven't actually got any runners on the dirt. So all the European horses are running on the turf. So it's going to be very, very competitive. And just hopefully we can get a couple of them over the line, you know.
One thing that always comes up, and one of the questions that handicappers have to try to figure out, is how will the European runners handle the firmer ground that they're going to get at Del Mar? And even if it were to rain in Southern California coming up to next weekend, it's still going to be firmer than what they are used to running on overseas. Who are some of the horses that immediately come to mind, Max, when you say, okay, this is a horse that will have no problem handling a firm ground? And then on the flip side of that, maybe the horses that might struggle on that type of going that you've seen internationally.
That's it. I think we just got to take a step back and say, well, actually, the owners, the trainers know exactly what to expect in terms of the ground. Like last year at Keeneland, pretty quick going. Not as quick as it's going to be next weekend. But these horses have been prepped. Owners, trainers, they know coming over to California, the ground's going to be quick. And if they didn't think that they're going to half-handle it, they wouldn't have even bothered thinking about shipping the horses. So I think we've got to trust to a certain extent that the trainers think that all of the horses are going to go on the ground. That's not necessarily the truth. But that's just the way we've got to see it, because otherwise, what's the point of shipping them? I suppose Glass Slippers in the turf sprint, I think we've got to keep a bit of an eye on her again. I think I actually put her up last year as an each-way bet or a win-play show, as you guys would have it, and she really did the business. Tom Eves is coming out again to ride her. She'll love the ground. Track should be fine, although the trip is half a furlong shorter this year as it was last year. But again, this has been the target all year. She was third in Longchamp, ran a great race. Ground was probably too soft for her that day, and she's reopposing with a Case of You. So, of Ado McGuinness's, having his first Breeders' Cup runner. So the sprint is going to be really exciting. I don't know what your thoughts on Golden Power. We know quite a bit of her through running in England. So I don't know what the confidence is like with Wesley's horse. I don't know if we've got any good vibes for that one.
Yeah, well, we're going to find out. You know, the other race that really catches my attention, and it always does when it comes to trying to get some value, is that juvenile turf race. And you mentioned some of the talented youngsters that are going to be coming over. But Albar, who goes for Charlie Appleby and Godolphin, has already started in North America, winning the Summer Stakes at Woodbine after winning three races overseas. And then the other one was Dubawi Legend, who I thought has some pretty good form in Europe for Hugo Palmer.
That's it. Hugo, he's brought a strong team out this year. And again, he's one of the trainers who likes to get his horses away. Charlie Appleby's been unstoppable. Everything he's brought to America this year has either won or placed. So you could literally go through the card and say, well, I'm just going to back every Charlie Appleby runner, and you'd probably come out in profit. So that'd be a bit of a lazy way to go about. But, it's quite realistic. Again, William Buick and James Doyle have decided what they'll be riding in the race. But Albert High's been fantastic all season. If it's any news, that's going to wear the white cap. The second colours is Albaha, and the other horse, Modern Games, is in the blue. So whether you take that as their chances, it's take that as your peril, basically. But that's usually the case. Blue cap for the most fancied one. So Modern Games is maybe the way to go in that race for the Appleby team.
Max, it sounds to me like if there was a prop bet, and maybe this is out there somewhere, and you could bet the trainers, either Aidan O'Brien or Charlie Appleby, and which of them was going to win more races at the Breeders' Cup this year, it sounds to me like you're leaning toward Charlie Appleby.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. No comparison for me this year. Aidan, you just can't write him off, and it wouldn't surprise you. The biggest problem Aidan's going to have is actually if his horse is getting the races, that's the problem we're going to have over the next couple of days. He needs a few to come out to get in, basically. Whereas with Charlie's, they're all rated high enough, and they've all been through the selection process and have guaranteed a run, basically. So if for a trainer to follow, Charlie's definitely the man. Say every time he goes abroad at the moment, they either win or they get placed. So if you want to do the lazy work, just back in blind, basically, and you won't be too far away. And William Buick, as we know, fantastic jockey. He just got denied in the English Jockeys Championship by Oisin Murphy. Oisin's actually coming out to ride here as well. So we've got a great team of jockeys coming, the best we can give. Frankie's obviously coming over. I spoke to him yesterday, and he just can't wait to get out here, as you can imagine. It's just so exciting to be here, to be honest, Mike. And we, you know, the last of our European horses arrived today, Aiden's lot and the Sheikh Mohammed lot, the Godolphin horses, they arrived today. And it'd be really interesting to see them out on the track at the start of next week, basically.
Max, have you gotten a chance to take a look at many of the Japanese contenders that are going to be making their way to the Breeders' Cup?
Yeah, so the Japanese horses have been here for, I think maybe over a week now. Settled in really well. I saw them on the track yesterday morning, just doing some light work. Again, with the Japanese horses, you've got Ping Sang, who's a regular over here. Whether or not they'll be quite good enough to take any honours, debatable. But they're obviously in the dirt races as well, so which I haven't taken a huge interest in, just purely because we've got no European runners in there. But all I can confirm is that the Japanese are really, really happy. Mr. Murray reported that horses travel great, and they're delighted to be here.
All right, let's do it this way. So outside of Charlie Appleby and Aiden O'Brien, which other trainer coming over from Europe is most likely to walk away with the Breeders' Cup trophy?
Now you put me on the spot. I think a trainer to watch out for is Dave Lochnan. He's a young trainer. He's got a couple of runners here, Go Bears Go. Go Bears Go in the Juvenile Turf Sprint. Very, very solid performer. Again, this has been the plan for many months now. That just at a big price could go well.
Well, we're going to find out. Again, the Breeders' Cup now just 6 days away. Max Pimlott with the International Racing Bureau is my guest here this morning on the Equine Forum. Max, before I let you go, your three most likely winners in the Breeders' Cup that would be international-based horses. They can be Japan, they can be France, they can be Great Britain, doesn't matter. Your three most likely winners.
Let's go for Breeders' Cup filly and mare Turf or Daria.
Okay.
And then in the turf, the bet of the meeting, Tanawa. And then let's go for Glass Slippers to follow up. So three previous winners. They know what it takes to come out here. They won't be huge prices, but if they're out the first three, we'd be very, very disappointed. But Tanawa's the one. That'll pay for the weekend for everyone.
Well, there you have it. I told you Max would clear it up for you. Max, appreciate the visit as always. Enjoy the week. Enjoy the Breeders' Cup next weekend. And by the way, I thought because of all the work that you and the team do with the International Racing Bureau that it was appropriate that you are this week's Industry Star of the Week. This interview brought to our listeners by Stuart Morris, who is a consigner that offers consignments at all the major sales, and he sponsors this segment. And I can think of nobody better to be this week's Industry Star of the Week than yourself, my friend. So congratulations on that.
Great honor, Mike. A great honor. And like I say, we just love coming over here. It means so much just to be competing. We've got trainers here who are just honored to be part of Breeders' Cup, which is what it's all about. And fingers crossed, the main thing, horses come back safe and sound, jockeys come back safe and sound, everyone has a great time, and we have a bit of fun.
Yeah, well said. Max, appreciate it. Enjoy the week.
Have a great week. Thanks, guys.
Max Pimlott, International Racing Bureau. That interview brought to you by Stuart Morris. He offers a boutique, full-service bloodstock operation, and he does want to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows his success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past several years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, South Bend, and 2021 stakes winners Pacific Gal and Nikki the Vest, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the upcoming major sales. I'm back to get you ready for hour two. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonySteaksandSeafood.com.
Right now, we all might feel a little disconnected. For seniors living alone with smaller social circles, feelings of loneliness and isolation can feel overwhelming. But there's something we can all do to help. Connect with your older loved one virtually and have the conversation of a lifetime with StoryCorps Connect. Anyone can conduct an interview, and every interview will be archived at the Library of Congress, becoming part of American history. Connect, honor, share at StoryCorpsConnect.org/AARP. A message from AARP, StoryCorps, and the Ad Council.
Joe Buck and John Smoltz welcoming you back to the City Center Convenience Mart. Well, John, the stage is set for the final transaction.
That's right, Joe. Heather's moment has arrived, and you just hope all that training pays off.
Heather lays down her purchase, but Randy rings it up as slowly as he can.
He is a wily veteran.
It gives Heather's eyes the chance to wander.
Uh-oh.
Yep, she's looking at the cigarettes.
There's nothing good back there. Quit now, and in 5 years, your odds of getting certain cancers drop 50%.
Meanwhile, Randy's stone-faced. He's giving nothing away. He just stands there, wetting his cashier's finger on that sponge.
Heather toes the rubber.
Here we go. Heather's arm is in motion. But instead of pointing at the back wall, she just grabs the gum off the counter.
That's a slick move.
Heather, back, back, back. She is out of there. Even Randy tips his cap to Heather. Stand Up to Cancer and Rally wants you to reduce your risk for cancer.
Go to TakeAHealthyStand.org.
The Breeders' Cup runs here. HRRN is your home for over 25 hours of coverage during Breeders' Cup Week, leading up to our exclusive broadcast of the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Don't miss our countdown shows, Race Day Radio, special Breeders' Cup editions of Trainer Talk, the Weekend Stakes Preview Show, and much more. Visit our website at horseracingradio.net for a complete schedule of exclusive Breeders' Cup programming, only on HRRN.
Hi, this is jockey Drayden Van Dyke. You're listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Top of the lane, My Miss Aurelia shoots away from the field, and My Miss Aurelia kicks for home. Grace Hall in the center of the track now coming to take her on. We Miss Frankie's back third, homeward bound, and it is My Miss Aurelia and Cory Nakatani. Grace Hall and Ramon Dominguez, the danger, chasing from second, but My Miss Aurelia is going to remain unbeaten in a dazzling performance. My Miss Aurelia and Cory Nakatani have won the Great Groups Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. Well, second will be Grace Hall. We Miss Frankie was a gallant third, and Self-Preservation came running on for four.
Well, the Breeders' Cup is definitely right around the corner. Starting next weekend, you can bet the event, the entire event, on TVG. We've been betting the TVG app for a while now, and no one does horse racing better. Let me tell you, if you've never tried it, listen up, because I have a special offer just for you here this morning. Right now, TVG is giving new players a 50% bonus on their first deposit. That's right. Here's what you have to do. They're giving you up to $250 in bonus money to bet this week's races. How would you bet an extra $250? Which horse do you like? Well, now you can find out. So whether you like my picks or our team's picks, whatever it might be, or you want to make your own, just download the TVG app and sign up with promo code HRRN to claim your deposit bonus. That's TVG, promo code HRRN.
Age and residency restrictions apply. New users only. Must place first qualifying deposit within 15 days of sign-up. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 30 days. See terms at TVG.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700.
And speaking of Breeders' Cup, you heard that call from Trevor Denman, the 2011 Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies, My Miss Aurelia. I told you at the beginning of the show, very, very similar pattern to Steve Asmussen's only other juvenile Phillies winner. She is the only other one. Echo Zulu, coming into this year's race, has a very similar pattern to My Miss Aurelia. And I'm going to talk to Steve coming up right around 9:35 Eastern. He'll preview all six of the horses that he pre-entered, including Echo Zulu. And make sure you stay tuned for that one. And by the way, I want to tell you, too, about the new outdoor superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. It is the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore. So many of you getting ready for the upcoming rifle season for whitetail deer here in Kentucky. All you have to do is head over to the Elite Outdoor Superstore, and they will take care of you. And they're just 3 miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road. And the best part is that the store is owned by former horse trainer Tevis McCauley. So all you have to do is go in and talk some racing with them and maybe spend some time looking through the items that they offer for the outdoors and for hunting season, whether it's deer, turkey, ducks, so much more. They even have two indoor archery ranges. So stop in and see them today. It is the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. All right, coming up next, I'm going to welcome in Elizabeth Ovalman from Fanticipate to tell you about their online auction to benefit Breeders' Cup charities. That comes up this week. Unsung Heroes, presented by Claiborne at 9:20. I welcome in Stone Street Farm yearling manager Robert Turner. And then Hall of Famer Steve Asmussen at 9:35 before Hour 3 comes up. In the Room with Sean Clancy, Kurt Becker stroll through racing history. And at 10:30 Eastern, I Ask, They Answer with Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin. That's all ahead on a very busy edition of the Equine Forum. Right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Yeah, rolling on, busy morning. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch. Happy to have you along for the ride here. Edging closer to the Breeders' Cup World Championships, now only 6 days, 8 hours, 48 minutes away. We'll be there as your exclusive radio home. This is Halloween weekend, too. And our question of the day, which you can cast your vote or your opinion. I thought we'd have a little fun here this morning. What is your favorite Halloween-themed horse name? Go to at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook to let me know your thoughts. Or if you don't do social media, email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. Let me know your favorite Halloween-themed horse name. I have a couple. Spooky Mulder is certainly one of them. Of course, you have Ghost Zapper. That's kind of an easy one, right? Shaman Ghost. Go with Shaman Ghost. Skip weighs in and says Candy Ride. Oh, there you go. By the way, what's your favorite Halloween candy? Let me know that, too. I'm a massive candy corn guy. Have you ever tried candy corns mixed with peanuts? I just discovered this a couple weeks ago, and people looked at me like I had six heads because I had never had candy corns mixed with peanuts. They're unbelievable. What a combination. I can't believe that I've never done this my entire life. Sylvia says Ghost Zapper. Nick says there was actually a horse named Halloween once. So let me know your thoughts at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Mike@horseracingradio.net is where you can email the show. What is your favorite Halloween-themed horse name? Elizabeth Ovalman is with Fanticipate. They are doing some wonderful work to benefit some tremendous industry charities, Breeders' Cup charities. That includes the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. And Elizabeth is with me now. This interview is presented by our friends at Jellyfish Water. Elizabeth, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm well. Do you have a favorite Halloween-themed horse name that you've seen run over the years?
You know, I think Shaman Ghost, you already mentioned that one. He's probably the one that popped right into my head. I loved that horse. And that's got to be my pick.
Yeah, Shaman Ghost is a good one. Again, Ghost Zapper, Spooky Mulder. There's a bunch of pumpkin names out there, too, I think, that would fit, and probably some witch names and ghost, other ghost names. But I'm anxious to hear people's thoughts as we move throughout the program. Also,
I'm going to have to try the candy corns and peanuts. That sounds outstanding.
Yeah, you've never had it.
No, I'm a Twizzlers girl.
Twizzlers are solid, too. Yeah, candy corns. And then come Christmas time, I start segueing into the Hershey Kisses.
Excellent.
You can't beat those. Can't beat those. All right, let's talk about what's coming up with you guys. And Fanticipate, I mentioned PDJF and Breeders' Cup Charities. You're doing some wonderful work to benefit those charities.
Yeah, and thank you again for having me on this morning, Mike. We're really, really excited for the Breeders' Cup coming up. So for those who might not be familiar with Fanticipate, what it is, it's an online auction platform, and it gives racing fans the opportunity to bid on unique items and experiences from their favorite stars in racing before the race even starts, before the gates even open. So, yeah, it's a really, really unique idea and a really cool chance for fans to get their hands on some one-of-a-kind items that you can only get through Fanticipate and get a little closer to the action. Yeah, we partnered with Breeders' Cup this year to offer a series of auctions around some of the Challenge Series races. So we had a few opportunities to auction off items leading up to the Breeders' Cup World Championships, and now we are gearing up full speed for the auctions we're going to offer around the Breeders' Cup. And, Mike, as you mentioned, all the proceeds from the items we auction off for Breeders' Cup will benefit Breeders' Cup charities. So we're really, really excited to partner with Breeders' Cup and appreciate all of their support, and also really excited to give back to these amazing industry charities.
And you've gotten the backing of so many big-name people in the sport, including Hall of Famer Mike Smith. Tell me a little bit about what Mike Smith is going to provide.
Yeah, and I preface this with a giant shout-out to our teammate, Barkley Porter, who has been hustling to secure a lot of the items that we will be auctioning off. So Mike Smith has been gracious enough to donate the pants that he will wear in the Classic next weekend. So we're really, really excited to offer those. Those are up live on the Fanticipate website. The other couple of things I wanted to highlight that we're super excited about, Doug O'Neill and the Hot Rod Charlie group have been tremendously supportive and gracious to offer the blinkers and shadow roll that Hot Rod Charlie's going to wear in the Breeders' Cup Classic. So, you know, again, these are one-of-a-kind, unique items that you can't get anywhere else, and can't extend my thanks enough to Barkley for his help and partnership with Doug and with Mike and helping us land these items. One more I wanted to highlight, that it's not in an active Breeders' Cup race, but everyone I'm sure will be familiar. So we also were fortunate enough to land the saddle towel that Lava Man will wear when he ponies Hot Rod Charlie for the Classic. Super excited on that one. That is also up live on our website. Of course, Lava Man, a legend in his own right, and really excited to offer that one as well.
Yeah, they call him the coach. His saddle towel says Coach Lava Man, which I love. That's the neat thing about Fanticipate, and this is what sets it apart. You're not bidding on, you know, items like an autographed picture. Certainly you could have those types of items available there, Elizabeth.
And we did that for the Haskell.
Yeah, yeah. But you're pretty much bidding on items that are going to be part of this year's Breeders' Cup, either in race, pre-race, you know, and that's what really makes it unique.
Yeah, and Mike, that's a great segue. So that's really kind of the foundational idea behind Fanticipate is you know, so say you've got these blinkers and shadow roll that Hot Rod Charlie is going to wear in the Classic. Now you're watching that race with a little bit more skin in the game, which really is a pretty cool concept.
Yeah, so I'm looking here, too. If you go to Fanticipate.com, and I encourage everybody to do that, you'll get a chance to see all of the items that are currently active. It gives you the time that's left to make your bids and of course, all the proceeds going to benefit Breeders' Cup charities. The Calumet Farm race-worn silks are pretty cool, too. You talk about Calumet Farm and the history and the tradition there. I know that this is not the Devil's Red and it's all different, but still, the black and gold Calumet Farm silks are race-worn, and that is a really cool item, too.
Yeah, and then also the signed horseshoe from Whitmore, who, of course, is a legend as well. Much loved, big following for that old guy. But there's a really cool there's a post on it on the website. But you know, of course, he's retired. He's not running this year. But Ron Moquette signed the shoe, and it is really a really cool story. So we're really excited to offer, you know, both items that enhance and celebrate the Breeders' Cup experience, as well as items from the actual participants.
Talk about the Breeders' Cup charities that you're benefiting, Elizabeth. I mentioned PDJF, but tell me about the others.
Yeah, so it's a collective of industry organizations that Breeders' Cup supports every year. And a few examples of the beneficiaries include, of course, the PDJF, Karma, Old Friends, a couple of the others are escaping me right now. But it is, the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance.
Yep.
There definitely are a number of charities, industry, very, very critical industry charities doing very important work that benefit from the money raised. So definitely, if you're going to bid, open that wallet, spend a lot, know that it's going to a really, really good cause.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's going right to those Breeders' Cup charities, and I think that's important to mention. You can't mention it enough. It's a wonderful idea, and that's what really Fanticipate is all about. And I know that moving forward, you're hoping to continue with this concept of taking race-worn items, whether it be, you know, a shadow roll by the horse or the blinkers or whatever it might be, or a saddle towel or jockey's pants, jockey's goggles that they actually wear in a race. And then you're going to take those and auction them off going forward too with other big races. Is that the plan?
Yep. That's the idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's great. You can go to Fanticipate.com to learn more, to make your bids and to support some wonderful Breeders' Cup charities. And Elizabeth, again, can't thank you enough for the work you're doing to support the industry. It's awesome. And keep it rolling.
Well, thank you, Mike. And thank you, as always, for the great work you do. I will encourage fans to check the website regularly. We're adding items all the time up to and through Breeders' Cup. So, you know, definitely keep an eye out for more items to come.
Yep, absolutely. Elizabeth Ovalman here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Fanticipate.com is the website, and appreciate it, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much, Mike.
All right. And that interview brought to you by Jellyfish Water. Whether you are a jockey, an owner, a trainer, or a horse player, there is always an opportunity to refresh and reset with every loss, and certainly a reason to rejoice with every win. Jellyfish Water is a bottle of inspiration, a set of principles, and a state of mind. Find your case of inspiration at jellyfishwater.com. I love the Lava Man thing. Right? Lava Man, he became so popular, right? He was such a cool horse, and now you get the opportunity to bid and own, if you get the winning bid, the actual saddle towel that Coach Lava Man is going to wear when he escorts Hot Rod Charlie to the post for the Breeders' Cup Classic. That's the cool concept behind Fanticipate, is that it's items that have been in the heat of competition, or prior to the competition in this case, like Lava Man. Just great stuff. So my thanks to Elizabeth for taking time there. When I come back in just a couple of minutes, well, you know what? I've got a couple of minutes here before we get to this next segment, so let me do this. I want to remind you about one more thing, and that's about the Claiming Crown, which the nominations are getting ready to close. You can go to claimingcrown.com. The 2021 Claiming Crown is going to be held at Gulfstream Park. They'll have full fields. They'll have big purses. And if you're a horseman that's looking to nominate, go to claimingcrown.com to get all the information and the details and make sure you nominate for the 2021 Claiming Crown. Told you that our Breeders' Cup coverage begins on Tuesday. This coming Tuesday, the first of three Breeders' Cup countdown shows presented by Hillendale Farms. Bobby Newman, Jude Feld will be live from Del Mar, 8 to 10 Pacific time. That's 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern is where you'll be able to tune into those shows. And then we segue into all of our Breeders' Cup coverage, both Friday and Saturday. The only place you're going to hear the Breeders' Cup on radio, once again, for the 15th consecutive year, is right here with us on the Horse Racing Radio Network, and very proud to be able to say that again this year. Our coverage on Friday, Breeders' Cup Friday, kicks off at 3 o'clock Eastern, a special Breeders' Cup edition of Race Day presented by Twin Spires. At 4:30 Eastern, earlier than its usual time, our weekend stakes preview show presented by Naira Betts. This is all next Friday. We're doing that before the Breeders' Cup races so that you'll hear analysis of every Breeders' Cup race on that weekend stakes preview. And then our Breeders' Cup coverage begins at 5:30, 5:30 to 9 on Friday. Next Saturday, this show, 8 to 11 a.m. Eastern, a special Breeders' Cup edition of the Equine Forum. And then 3 to 9 Eastern, 6 hours of Breeders' Cup Saturday race coverage with our team here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. You can go to horseracingradio.net to see a schedule. One programming note. Well, I have a second here. The Breeders' Cup countdown shows Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday morning, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, Sirius 216, XM 202. So those are different channels than the other stuff that you're listening to, all of our other programming, and this show right now. Sirius 216, XM 202 is your home for the Breeders' Cup countdown on Sirius XM satellite radio. All right, when I come back, it is Unsung Heroes. I welcome in Robert Turner, longtime yearling manager at Stone Street Farm. This is going to be good. Stay with me. It's the Equine Forum presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Champions are returning to Gulfstream for the championship meet starting December 3rd until April 3rd. Witness the best thoroughbred racing Wednesday through Sunday with weekly stakes races. Returning for its sixth year this January is the 2022 Pegasus World Cup with world-class racing, delectable cuisine, stunning celebrities, and iconic fashion. New for 2022 is the third graded stakes race, the Pegasus Turf for fillies and mares with a $500,000 purse. Tickets go on sale November 8th. Visit PegasusWorldCup.com to learn more and get tickets.
Racing fans, don't miss closing weekend this Saturday and Sunday at Spectacular Santa Anita. On Saturday, we'll have the Grade 3 Autumn Mistakes, and on Sunday, we'll have the Grade 2 $200,000 Twilight Derby. And if there is no single ticket winner in Saturday's 20-cent Rainbow Pick 6 jackpot, Sunday's mandatory payout pool could approach $5 million. If you play Sunday's Rainbow 6 via First Bet or Express Bet, you'll get a free $10 bet, and you can also download free past performances of Sunday's card at SantaAnita.com. And be sure to make plans to watch and wager on the two-day Breeders' Cup World Championships from Del Mar next Friday and Saturday right here at Santa Anita. Walk-up admission is free and no reservations are required. Admission to our Front Runner restaurant is $5. Simulcast wagering from Del Mar begins Wednesday, November 3rd. First post time this Saturday and Sunday is at 12:30.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Summer in Saratoga has a three-length lead to Luck Money. Summer in Saratoga, Luck Money is second, Michelin to third. Summer in Saratoga, Corey Lannery to win. The Rude and Riddle Dowager by a half length on the line.
Summer in Saratoga, the daughter of Darley Stallion, Hard Spun, outgained the competition to win the Grade 3 Dowager at Keeneland on Sunday, earning a 92 buyer, an effort that makes her your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Hard Spun is Danzig's last Grade 1 winning son, who sired more First Crop Stakes winners than any other stallion before him. Summer in Saratoga is one of 16 black type horses this year for Hard Spun, a list that also includes Grade 1 Met Mile winner Silver State, who runs next in the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. Learn more about Hard Spun and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
Hi, this is Joel Rosario, and I listen to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Heroes in the world of sports are not uncommon. Oftentimes, thrusting themselves into the limelight through unimaginable feats.
Back behind the ball, Woods puts it.
And in! He has done it! Tiger is back! Tiger is back on top! Tiger Woods, the 2019 Masters Champion!
And breathtaking performances.
Here's how you count to eight, three, two, one. And for the eighth time, college basketball's national championship trophy is coming home to Kentucky.
But behind every great hero, there are others. Individuals who play a crucial role in the achievements of those we read about in the headlines. The ultimate team players. Content to stand behind the curtain, embracing their place as a vital part of a sport's success. In horse racing, these are the unsung heroes.
Alan, our sport would be nothing without those unsung heroes. They are an integral part of making this sport a success, working behind the scenes, and one of those individuals is with me now. That is Robert Turner, the longtime yearling manager at Stone Street Farm. And when you think of Stone Street, you think of greatness. Names like Curlin come to mind immediately, and Cavorting, and there have been some unbelievable horses. And with me now is Robert Turner. Robert, good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
Yeah, excited to hear your story. And boy, what a privilege this has to be for you, my friend. Not coming on this show, but getting to work at Stone Street Farm every single day.
Yes, it's a big honor to be a part of Stone Street.
Yeah.
Great place to work.
And the big names that have come through that program, just unparalleled, really. You know, Godolphin offers the Thoroughbred Industry Awards, and a couple of weeks ago, Robert, you were honored as the winner of one of those categories. And boy, it's got to be tremendous for you to be able to look back and say, "Wow, I was nominated, and they thought enough of my work to vote me as the winner."
Yes, it was a big honor. It's a big honor, and that bunch of great people there. You know, just meeting people from all walks of life, it's really neat.
Well, tell me about your job at Stone Street. What does the yearling manager do?
We get the babies over in October, and we raise them up through the following year, September, and get them to the sales and whatnot, and just get them fit, you know, for the sales and stuff. We've been leading consigner the last 6 years in a row by Groves, so we're very proud of that, and just work with the amazing horses that we work with. But it's all about just taking care of the horses daily, you know, feeding, program, and keeping their feet in good shape and whatnot, and just and a lot of luck too, you know. Even if you do everything right, it's not everything don't always work out for you.
Yeah, that's true. You have to have everything go right, and then you need a little luck to help you out on the other side of that too. Have you always been on the farm side of things, Robert?
Yes, sir. I've been doing this since I was 20 years old.
Wow. How old are you now?
57.
What was your first job?
Creekview Farm in Paris, Kentucky. I worked for Robert Sangster back in the day.
Man, what were you doing there?
Working with mares and foals.
Yep. So this is something that has always been a passion for you.
Yes, sir. We had ponies and stuff, you know, when we was growing up, too. So that's probably where it all started at.
What's the greatest thing about your job?
It's just been around the animals, the great animals and great people. And just seeing them progress through the year, you know, and then get them to a sale. And if you have a good sale, you know, when you sell something for over $1 million, you're really proud of it, you know. And I want them to go on and race, too. Everything we sell here, we want them to race. We want them to win for people.
What do you remember about the first day you walked into Stone Street?
It was just wow, you know. It was unbelievable the kind of place it was from where I came from, you know.
Yeah, I guess that was, what, 13 years ago?
13 years ago, yes.
Yeah, yeah, incredible. You know, Barbara Banky, the owner of Stone Street, when you were up for the Godolphin Awards, they produced a beautiful video, and she had a wonderful quote. She said that hiring you was one of the best decisions that they have made in quite some time. To hear those kind of words about you from Barbara Banky, what does that mean?
That means everything. Barbara's a great lady. She's done so much for everybody here on this farm, and she does it daily, you know. And she's an unsung hero. But she's a great person and a great person to work for.
She also described you as a great horseman. How important is it for you to hear those words?
It means a lot. It means you're doing your job. You know, I'm here every day. I've been here 13 years and never missed a day.
Wow. incredible. It's a love, and it's a love that Robert Turner has turned into a career. He is now the yearly manager at Stone Street Farm, and he is this week's unsung hero presented by Claiborne. So, Robert, take me through your typical day. When does it start? What do you do?
We start at 7 o'clock in the morning. Right now we got to bring the wingmans over, so we'll get them in the mornings and take temps and make sure we didn't have a sick horse or anything, and doctor whatever we need to doctor, you know, for his little nicks or whatnot. And then they'll eat, and then they'll go back out around 9:30 in the mornings. About 2 o'clock in the afternoon, we feed everything outside in the afternoons and let them be a herd animal, you know. I think that's what makes them competitive. And come May, we'll start bringing the horses in, start fitting for the sale, and our day starts at 7 o'clock, and we'll get the horses in the mornings and feed them, you know, and then start fitting them on the walker, and then when they come off the walker, we'll spray them off and whatnot, and then in the afternoons from 1 o'clock till about 3 o'clock, we'll brush everything and doctor and whatnot, and then at 7 o'clock at night, and we'll come back and turn the horses out to keep them from getting sunburned. And it takes about an hour and 15 minutes to get that done. And, you know, on a farm, you never really get done. You just quit for the day.
Yeah, the work is never done, right?
Exactly.
You mentioned turning them out, letting the young horses be herd animals. And you said that's what makes them competitive when they get later on in their careers. Talk more about that.
I think, you know, you go out in the field, you feed a horse, and you see who the dominant ones are, you know, and, you know, it seems like all the good horses stays out of harm's way, too, you know, every horse here has, I mean, they're bred right, they're raised right, and every horse on this farm has a chance of being a champion.
I mentioned names like Curlin. I mentioned names like Dreaming of Julia and, you know, Cavorting and Dream Pauline. Clary Air, by the way, who's going to be going in the Breeders' Cup Distaff this year. Tell me about some of the yearlings that you're always going to remember.
Dreaming of Julia is one. I brushed her as a yearling. I brush horses here just like that. My string of horses I brush just like every other groom do. She'll always be a happy place in my heart just because I brushed her, you know, and she's come on to be a pretty good producer, too.
When you become attached to a horse like that that's a yearling, Robert, do you follow them all the way through their career?
Oh, yeah, yes. Especially one as talented as she was, you know.
Did you know when she was a baby on the farm that she was going to be that good?
I didn't know she'd be that good, but I thought she would be good.
Yeah. Are there certain characteristics that all those yearlings have, that the good yearlings, that really make them stand out?
Good-minded, you know, and got a lot of class to them.
What does that mean, like a lot of class to them? When you see them in the field, you see them in the barn, how do you know that they have class?
They just reek with class, you know. It's just like a human being or anything, you know. They just stand out. They got the presence about them.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of an intangible thing, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Outside of Dreaming of Julia, who else stands out to you?
My Miss Ray, she was my first Breeders' Cup winner that I raised here.
Yeah, she was special, wasn't she?
Yes, she was.
11 years ago. No, 10 years ago. 10 years ago.
Yep.
2011.
Time flies.
Yeah. What do you remember about the day that she won the Breeders' Cup?
We all went and watched the run. It was just neat, you know, us all jumping around and stuff. It was a great day.
Yeah, well, great day, and it all starts somewhere, and it starts at Stone Street Farm with their yearling manager, Robert Turner, who is this week's unsung hero. Robert, listen, really appreciate you spending some time with me this morning, and congratulations on your Godolphin Award. That's quite an honor, and all the best moving forward, my friend.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate you.
All right, Robert Turner, Stone Street Farm Yearling Manager, this week's Unsung Hero presented by Claiborne. I'll be back right after this word from Claiborne Farm.
Ironicus. This graded stakes-winning millionaire defeated over 20 Grade 1 winners. A Grade 2 winner and course record setter at Saratoga. He won 3 graded stakes and was runner-up in multiple Grade 1 events. Top runners include graded stakes winner Helium.
Repose the challenge. It's Helium in a huge effort.
the leading money earner at stud for emerging Sire of Sires distorted humor, Ironicus, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Yeah, you know, this industry, this sport is filled with people like Robert who do unbelievable work at the farms and do great work behind the scenes. And it is such a privilege every other week to be able to bring you those stories. And if you know someone, by the way, who is an unsung hero, who you feel needs to be recognized in those segments, nominate them today. All you have to do is email their story to me, mike@horseracingradio.net, and I will do my best to recognize them during these segments coming up in the weeks and the months ahead. My thanks to Claiborne Farm for making them possible, too, and allowing us to recognize them each and every week. All right, when I come back, you will hear from Hall of Fame trainer Steve Asmussen as he walks through all six of his Breeders' Cup pre-entered horses. This is the Equine Forum presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
The Breeders' Cup runs here, coming November 5th and 6th, exclusively on HRRN.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Coming this November, it's the America's Best Racing Fan Choice Awards. Covering the best of the sport and lifestyle, all decided by the fans. Here's your chance to vote. The America's Best Racing Fan Choice Awards.
Hey everyone, it's the Baron with this week's North of the Border report presented by Woodbine Entertainment. 14 hopefuls, including Dan Bella's charge, the Minkster, are set to square off in the $250,000 Coronation Futurity, which headlines a trio of stakes this Saturday at Woodbine. The Mile and an Eighth to PETA event for Canadian Fold two-year-olds is a significant race on the road to next year's Queen's Plate. Trainer Dan Bella, in search of his first Coronation Futurity crown, will send out the Minkster. The Bay Sun of English Channel impressed in his career bow on October 2nd. Sent off at odds of 5-1, the Minkster forced the pace from the rail on the turn before taking the lead in the stretch and widening to a 6 1/4 length victory. "I was expecting a really big effort," said Bella. "You never quite expect it to be that easy. That win was even easier than it looks on paper. He was pretty much geared down and ran green, but he's a very talented horse." Bella concluded his post-race comments that day saying, "Wait until he figures out how to run in a straight line. That could spell trouble for the competition later today." Bella has similar high praise for his glorious song contender, Marie McKay. The Bay Daughter of Noble Mission, bred and owned by Donald Whalen and TrackWest Racing, took the Shady Well Stakes on October 8th at Woodbine. Other Coronation Futurity starters include a trio of Mark Cassie trainees, Fast Feet, God of Love, and Lament, and three from the barn of Kevin Attard, Hidden Honor, Kitty Holiday, and LaRocque, as well as Stronger Together, who is trained by Sid Attard. The 108th running of the Coronation Futurity is slated as race 8 on Saturday's 11-race card. First post is 12:55 p.m. The $125,000 Display Stakes and $125,000 Glorious Song will go as races 3 and 9 respectively. Both of those are 7 furlongs on the Tapeta. And that's your North of the Border report for this Saturday morning. For more updates and racing information, visit Woodbine.com or follow along on Twitter at WoodbineTB.
This is Dale Romans, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Arrowgate's going to take the far outside route. He's coming up on the outside of Gunavera, but he's a long way behind Gunrunner and Collected as they make their way to the top of the stretch in the Breeders' Cup Classic. They're into the stretch, and it's Collected and Gunrunner. They've been battling since the gates opened. Gunrunner's got the lead. Collected West Coast is bearing down on them on the outside. Final 16th. Gunrunner reaching for the wire. Collected's alongside. And then comes West Coast and War Story. But Gunrunner's on top of the world. He wins the Breeders' Cup Classic over Collected. Then came West Coast, followed by War Story. Arrowgate was coming late, but too late. The final time was 2:01.29.
Boy, if that doesn't get you pumped up for the Breeders' Cup at Del Mar, nothing will. What a way to lead into this segment. I now have the privilege of going down the road to the Breeders' Cup with Hall of Fame trainer Steve Asmussen, North America's all-time leading trainer with more than 9,500 career victories and purse earnings now in excess of $369 million. That number, by the way, second only to fellow Hall of Fame trainer Todd Pletcher all-time. Included among those lofty numbers I just mentioned are seven Breeders' Cup winners, two of those coming in the Breeders' Cup Classic, his most recent, of course, being Gunrunner, and that call you just heard from NBC's Larry Colmus, the only other time the Breeders' Cup was held at Del Mar. So it's a good omen. It's a special place for trainer Steve Asmussen. He has six horses pre-entered into this year's Breeders' Cup and would love nothing more than to add to those lofty totals next weekend. Steve, appreciate the visit here. Thanks for joining me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Very good lead-in, as you put it.
Oh, thanks so much. Yeah, you think about those numbers and everything you've accomplished, and you think about the call we just heard of Gunrunner. When you were listening to that, what was going through your mind?
I've watched that replay many a time. What a great performance on a great day by a great horse.
Where does that win, in your second classic win, where does that rank for you among all the things you've been able to accomplish? It's got to be right up there.
Oh, it definitely is. Like I said, it was a great performance by a great horse. The style in which he did it, taking it to him. Racetrack hadn't shown or definitely wasn't playing towards his style, but had the confidence in him. Florent had the confidence in him to ride his race and just simply ran him off their feet. And 45 and change first, half mile, going a mile and a quarter on a racetrack that hadn't been favoring any pace, I think says what a true champion that Gunrunner is.
Yeah, your first win came with Curlin in the Classic back in 2007, and that was your very first Breeders' Cup win. What a way to break through there. What type of horse, Steve, does it take to win a race like the Breeders' Cup Classic?
Our two victories in the Breeders' Cup Classic are with Curlin and Gunrunner, and one is a Hall of Famer, and the other one is no doubt going to be a Hall of Famer. So for me, that's the caliber of horse it has taken.
We're going to walk through all your runners this year, but since we're talking about the Classic, let's just go ahead and start with the big one and Max Player. He comes out of that huge win in the Jockey Club Gold Cup at Saratoga on September 4th. He has been brilliant in his recent starts. Do you see Max Player fitting into that mold of a Curlin, of a Gunrunner?
His last two races, as you mentioned, are outstanding. His Suburban win and following that up with a very good win. Off track in the Suburban at Belmont Park, but then transferring that form to two-turn race, mile and a quarter, in the Jockey Club Gold Cup at Saratoga is very exciting. He has trained extremely well in California. Recently, Sunday moved to Del Mar and has looked great over the surface at Del Mar. And we expect another top-class performance from Max Player in the Classic.
He was struggling a bit before those two victories in the Suburban and the Jockey Club Gold Cup that you just talked about. Six in the Pimlico Special, didn't run all that well in the Saudi Cup, certainly. What's been the key to getting that light bulb to go on and seeing this turnaround from Max Player?
Well, Ricardo getting him away from the gates and being in the race. He had eliminated himself in the majority of his starts for us previous to that, giving him 7 to 10 lengths away from the gates in the first four and five jumps with a horse that's obviously distance help, and he stays and made a concentrated effort to have his first 100 yards considerably better, and then he stays on extremely well from then. He's always been a horse that's had a lot of class away from the poles. He is an impressive horse, and then just giving him too much to do in quality fields away from the gate.
How does that surface at Del Mar stack up to the surfaces he was running on back east at Belmont and Saratoga?
It'll be very interesting. You know, that's meet starts on Wednesday. Haven't been on it. They haven't been training on it until this Monday. It seems to be in very good shape right now, and they're training over it very lively. The Del Mar weather has everybody feeling really good and very sharp, but we will definitely be watching races starting Wednesday intently with how the racetrack is playing.
So often we'll hear about trainers that will go out, Steve, and they'll walk on the turf course early in the day or early in the week before a big event like the Breeders' Cup, for example. Some trainers will go out and they'll check out the dirt course. Will you get out there? I mean, you're out there every morning with the training anyway, but will you actually get down and physically get a feel for what the surface is all about?
No, I definitely have not learned that skill as a trainer. I'll rely on my handicapping and watching races run.
Yeah. Okay. So there you go. So there's a good point. So here's North America's all-time leading trainer, and you've won more races than anybody else in the history of the sport. What's your approach to coming into a big event like this? How do you do it?
Well, I think that you're concentrating on getting your horses at their peak mentally and physically on the day in question. I feel extremely confident how this group is training and how they're acting. And then what you are looking for from here on out is how the racetrack is playing. And if there is any bias as far as what part of the racetrack that seems to be favoring or something, whether you're avoiding it or trying to get to it, I think that depends on how big a bias it is.
All right, let's go back to the other horses then that you have pre-entered. We'll start on Friday. Echo Zulu in the Juvenile Fillies, undefeated daughter of the aforementioned Gunrunner. Just heard that call of him winning the Classic. This is actually the 10-year anniversary of your only other win in the Juvenile Fillies with My Miss Aurelia. And that was another filly coming in. She was another filly that was also a perfect 3-for-3, just like Echo Zulu. So tell me a little bit about her.
Yes, that is My Miss Aurelia being a winner of the Frisette, also very similar time to Echo Zulu's. And then the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Filly was My Miss Aurelia's first two-turn race, as well as it will be Echo Zulu's. He's just a brilliantly fast filly, very straightforward right through the front door, very handy, very confident filly that's got a tremendous amount of ability. And we're very excited to have her, let alone the chance to win the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies with her.
When you're preparing a young horse like this to go around two turns for the first time, what are some of the things that Steve Asmussen is keeping in mind?
Well, I think it's very individual with each one of them. I mean, this is a filly that is very handy. She's been away from the gates very cleanly in all three of her races. We would expect more of the same. And she's very, very professional as far as racehorses go, concentrates well. Has run straight as a string and seems to know where the wire is. But we're just same as with My Miss Aurelia going into it. We're looking for more of the same.
That's the only horse you have pre-entered for the Friday races. We were expecting to see Gunite in the Juvenile, but he is not pre-entered. What's up with Gunite?
Well, he did travel to California with Echo Zulu, but he's had 7 runs as a 2-year-old and done plenty. And I think his works with her at Santa Anita showed that she's going forward and he needs a little break.
Visiting with Hall of Famer Steve Asmussen, going down the road to the Breeders' Cup here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. All right, let's move on to Saturday because you're going to earn your money Saturday, Steve. You're going to be a busy man. We'll start with Silver State, who is pre-entered into the Dirt Mile. Boy, has he been good this year.
Absolutely. You know, anytime you get a chance to run a Met Mile winner in the Breeders' Cup Mile, he is, you know, just an absolutely beautiful horse that's having a tremendous year, and nothing would be better than capping it off with the Breeders' Cup Mile victory. I doubt there'll be a better-looking horse in the Breeders' Cup than there is Silver State, and We're very excited for this opportunity with him.
Yeah, he's very, very talented. And that win in the Met Mile, how brilliant was that performance?
Well, I defeated the classic favorite in the race, and he's training really extremely well right now. So we're very excited.
You also have Snapper Sinclair for our good friend and colleague here on the network, Jeff Bloom. Snapper Sinclair cross-entered into the Dirt Mile and the Turf Mile. Which way do you think you guys are leaning there?
Well, it appears that we will. I think he's too far down the list to get in the Turf Mile, and Snapper is extremely versatile. He actually was fourth in the Dirt Mile a couple years ago at Santa Anita, and last year he's second in the Cigar Mile. So very surface, versatile horse that always brings his A race.
All right, let's move on to the Breeders' Cup Sprint. When I say the name Jackie's Warrior, what things pop into your mind, Steve?
I think obviously puts a smile on my face, you know, with what a brilliant racehorse he is. It is wonderful to have a horse of this caliber, a three-time Grade One winner for Kirk and Judy Robeson, just great owners in the sport. It would be a very special moment to possibly win the Breeders' Cup Sprint with Jackie's Warrior, and actually most likely would make him the champion sprinter of the year. And with that on the table, that would be a huge honor to share with the Robesons.
You have been blessed over your career with so many wonderful relationships that you've had with your owners and long-standing relationships. Why would this be so special to win it for Judy and Kirk?
From El Paso, train for him at Sunland Park. It's a remember where you come from moment, you know, and I probably have been fortunate enough to work for them for over 20 years and just had some very nice, good, solid horses. But Jackie's Warrior has exceeded that and is obviously the best horse that I've had for him. And that sort of long-term relationship and loyalty in this game, you just wouldn't it be great to share a Breeders' Cup victory?
Yeah, it would be very, very special. And finally, let's talk about Clairiere in the Distaff. She comes out of that big win in the Grade 1 Cotillion at Parks on September 25th.
Yeah, I'm extremely biased when it comes to Clairiere being a daughter of Curlin, just as classy as a filly can be, out of, the great mare Cavorting. And it was extremely rewarding to see. She's always kept top-class company, but for her to break through and have her Grade 1 victory in her last start in the Cotillion, and her trajectory is up, and we're nothing but respect for the field and the Distaff, but Clairiere will definitely be heard from.
She had been Grade 1 placed on a couple of occasions before that, Steve, and finally, as you said, broke through in the Cotillion to get that Grade 1 victory. For people that don't understand what that means to a mare's value, talk about how important it is, especially for a three-year-old filly like Clairiere.
Well, I think that our value is how could you possibly be worth more than a mare like her?
Yeah.
You know, Curlin out of Cavorting, the great race mare she is. But for me, it's just that's who she is. She's capable of that. And for her to accomplish it is the feeling. Her value is quite obvious and substantial, always has been, always will be. But I definitely don't think that the Cotillion was her last Grade 1 victory. This is going to be a great race mare.
Yeah, she's very, very talented. She will have to turn the tables on her rival, Malathot, who has beaten her a few times in her career. What's the key to turning the tables on her and everybody else in that Distaff, Steve?
Running faster than they did. And, in horse racing, you get paid for what you do, but you pay for it. So your resume will not run for you. You got to show up and do it. And Clairiere is more horse than she's been in the past, and I think her recent form is showing that. And regardless of who the measure is.
Well, when they say there is nobody better, You can certainly say that about Steve Asmussen, because nobody in the sport is better at saddling winners than Steve Asmussen. Steve, listen, appreciate the visit. Thanks for taking some time here this morning. I know it's a busy, busy time of year for you. Good luck at the Breeders' Cup, and we'll be looking for you in the winner's circle.
Thank you very much. Excited for the week.
All right, Hall of Famer Steve Asmussen going down the road to the Breeders' Cup here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And, you know, it's always funny because Steve is so humble when you do these interviews with him that, you know, getting him to talk about himself and his approach, it's so nonchalant almost. And here's a guy with 9,500-plus winners, and he's still very nonchalant about his approach and how he does it. And, you know, he hasn't mastered the skill of looking at the racetracks the way some trainers will do. And he's just so honest in his opinions, and really appreciate Steve taking the time. And yeah, he's loaded. I mean, Jackie's Warrior is as talented as any horse that's going to be out there at the Breeders' Cup. I think Echo Zulu, I don't know if she'll go favorite in there, but I think she should. I mean, you look at her body of work, it's been ridiculously impressive. And he talked about the comparisons to My Miss Aurelia and coming into the race in similar fashion out of that win in the Frisette, undefeated 3-for-3. We know how good My Miss Aurelia turned out to be, and certainly Echo Zulu is following in that same path. Plus, she is a daughter of the undefeated Gunrunner. So Steve Asmussen, loaded. Looks like Snapper Sinclair, who is cross-entered into the Dirt Mile and the Turf Mile, as you heard him say, likely going to go to the Dirt Mile because of the fact that he's probably not going to get in to the Turf Mile. So we'll see. It's going to be a lot of fun, one heck of a week, and Steve Asmussen will be heard from. There's no doubt about it. I'll be back to take a look at some historical dates in racing history and get you ready for hour number three. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
70 organizations, 160 facilities, 7,800 horses, one accreditation. The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance is the only accrediting body in Thoroughbred Aftercare and is supported by all aspects of the Thoroughbred industry. To learn more or to support the TAA, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
James Brown and Bill Cowher welcoming you back to Dennis Melvin's house. It's time for the Midnight Snack Run.
This is one tricky obstacle course. Sticking to healthy habits in this kitchen is going to take focus and determination, but it can be done, JB.
He's already entered the snack part of the course, and he's eyeballing a jar of chocolatey candy.
That is tempting right off the start.
Uh-oh, he's reaching, Bill. But he pushes it away.
Great stiff arm.
He's approaching a plate of delicious-looking iced cookies.
Oh, Dennis, you only want one of those?
He blows right by him for the apple.
Oh, the fridge. It's make or break time, JB.
He stares down some rich-looking treats. Uh-oh, looks like he's headed for the soda. Wait, he jukes left, grabs the water bottle, and shuts the door with his elbow in record time.
Unbelievable move. I gotta see that again.
And he's out. He even turned off the light.
That's the way you execute a midnight snack run.
Stand Up to Cancer and Rally want you to reduce your risk for cancer.
Go to takeahealthystand.org.
Remember the last time your family visited the forest? It's a place of wonder and imagination for the whole family, where stories come to life. And it's closer than you think. Ready to plan your next visit? Make the forest part of your story today at a local park near you, or find one at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Bobby Newman. Join me next week for the Breeders' Cup Countdown right here on HRRN.
Jude Feld and I will broadcast live from Del Mar, and we'll bring you up-to-the-minute reports on the Breeders' Cup World Championships, featuring interviews with trainers, jockeys, owners, and other racing insiders. The Breeders' Cup Countdown, presented by Hillandale Farms, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, Tuesday through Thursday of Breeders' Cup Week, on Sirius 216, XM 202, and streaming live at horseracingradio.net.
Yo, guys, they call me Jersey Joe, but it's only Joe Bravo. Call me whatever you like. Just so happy that you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, all presented by Woodbine Entertainment. On this Saturday morning, Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you as always. 1 week away from the Breeders' Cup and 1 day away from the opening of the Churchill Fall Meet. You heard Darren Rogers talking about the meet and talking about tomorrow's Stars of Tomorrow program, which is going to be spectacular. All two-year-old racing tomorrow at Churchill Down. And Stars of Tomorrow are bred in Kentucky. Let's face it. When it comes to two-year-old racing, Kentucky breds are at the top of the class. Kentucky breds have dominated the two-year-old stakes ranks in 2021, winning 36 of the 38 juvenile stakes races so far this year. That includes 23 of the 24 graded stakes and all 8 grade ones. That's impressive. And with purse money soaring at the state's 5 tracks and maiden special weight purses up to $135,000 here in the Bluegrass, Kentucky is the most lucrative place for all your future stars. You can find your Kentucky bred at the upcoming November breeding stock sales. Fasig Tipton's November sale is November 9th, and at Keeneland, November 10th to the 19th. Kentucky breds, breed them, race them, race them. We all win. Yeah, we all do win. Boy, I talked to Darren about that. The purses are ridiculous. I mean, $125,000, $135,000 for maiden races. Where else are you going to be? This is the place. And all of the historical horse racing machines that are in place have helped benefit so many horsemen across the Bluegrass. And make sure that you make plans to be here. As it says, Kentucky breds, breed them, raise them, race them, and we all win. We certainly do. All right, time now to take a look at some notable dates in racing history. Then I'll update you on the poll question here this morning. Yesterday, October 29th, 1948, was the anniversary of Calumet Farms' three-year-old Citation entering the Pimlico Invitational Stakes. The Pimlico Invitational Special Stakes is what it was known back then. Unopposed, and he won in a walkover, earning $10,000 for galloping a mile and 3/16 over that course in 1:59 4/5. Another great Calumet runner, Whirlaway, also won the special in a walkover in 1942. It was October 29th, 1955, that Charlie Whittingham and Bill Shoemaker scored their first stakes victory as a trainer-rider team. That was with Mr. Gus in the William P. Kine handicap at Bay Meadows. And October 29th, 1998, yeah, yesterday was the anniversary of Triple Crown winner and 1970s icon Secretariat being selected as one of 15 subjects to be honored with commemorative postal stamps in 1999. I thought that was pretty cool. Today's the anniversary, October 30th, 1937, of Sir Barton, the first American Triple Crown winner. He died at the age of 21 on this day in 1937. After an undistinguished career as a sire, Sir Barton was sent to the U.S. Army's Remount Division in Nebraska and then to a ranch in Wyoming, where he remained until his death. Can you imagine that? Yeah, we're just part of the lore, the legend, and the mystique of thoroughbred racing. And one more for you. October 30th, 1988. This was the day that after the blinkers on his mount, Roaring River, worked loose, jockey Francisco Torres grabbed them and placed them between his teeth to keep his hands free for riding. Yeah, Roaring River won that race at Hawthorne by 3 lengths. That was October 30th, 1988. Francisco Torres, what a move it was that day. Pretty cool. And those are some historical dates in racing history. I asked you the question of the day. So many of you are taking time to weigh in on our Twitter feed, at HRRN. You can do it on Facebook, too, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. But concerning the fact that tomorrow is Halloween, and Dale Romans, who you're going to hear from coming up at the end of the show in this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer with Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin. Dale giving out Hallowed Time as his horse that is the hunch play for tomorrow in the Street Scent Stakes at Churchill Downs. The Dam is Werewolf. The Dam of Hallowed Time is Werewolf. And Howling Time, I say Hallowed, Howling Time is the name of the horse. Number six, Dale Romans is the trainee. So I thought, okay, what is your favorite Halloween-themed horse name? And Morticia, that's a good one. The Pontiff of the Pick Four, chiming in with Morticia. I like that one. Here's my favorite, Spooky Mulder. Andrew says Spooky Mulder, my favorite horse of all time. That was a really cool, perfect Halloween name. Runaway Ghost, Candy Ride, Ghost Zapper, Spooky Channel gets a vote. Keep them coming at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. 2 hours down, one to go on today's Equine Forum. Hour three kicks off momentarily with Sean Clancy and his In the Room segment, 10:25. Kurt Becker takes you on his weekly stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. And at 10:30, once again, I welcome trainer Dale Romans, turf writer Tim Wilkin for this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer. You won't want to miss that one. If your local station is leaving us at this time, you can continue listening to the third hour of the program nationwide on Sirius 219, XM 201, in the Louisville, Kentucky market on ESPN 680, or on your computer, phone, or tablet with our live streaming at horseracingradio.net. Hour 3 is next, right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Spooky Mulder, Call Me Tony in a pitch battle down the stretch here. Spooky Mulder fighting his way to a short lead. Spooky Mulder in front. Call Me Tony fights him hard all the way down to the line. But at the finish, it's going to be Spooky Mulder.
Shaman Ghost is drifting out a little bit while giving chase. It's Midnight Storm. Shaman Ghost out towards the middle of the track. It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile. Shaman Ghost has beaten Midnight Storm.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Zombie is stalking them in between runners. Big Guy in. Google Ado, Scrutinizer there too. Zombie drops in for a stretch drive with Google Ado. Scrutinizer is back to third. And here is Zombie. And Terry Thompson goes on to clear and win. Zombie.
Ghost Zapper has now shrugged off Roses in May. Presently Perfect continues to rally down the center of the track. Azari doing her best, but she's now fifth. In between horses, Perfect Drift. Ghost Zapper kicking clear. And Ghost Zapper is pulling away impressively.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Yeah, special Halloween edition, so to speak. Halloween tomorrow. So many great Halloween-themed horse names. Welcome back to the program. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. The Breeders' Cup edging ever closer now. We are 6 days, 7 hours, and 48 minutes away. Of course, we'll be there all week long, beginning on Tuesday morning as your official radio network of the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Busy show so far. If you missed any portion of the program, head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of the show at your leisure. So many of you have done that with this show and with all of our weekly talk shows, and really appreciate you tuning in. Horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Well, Hour 3 begins here with In the Room with Sean Clancy. We kick it off like this every week, and Sean sits down for his unique one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation. This week with Nathan Horrocks, who is a retired steeplechase jockey, now a film producer in his second career. It's a fascinating story. Here it is. We go In the Room with Sean Clancy.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
Hi, I'm Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with jockey-turned-director Nathan Horrocks. Nathan, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on, Sean. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
Let's start with your recent movie called The Fall, which I've watched, and talk about a touching, jolting short story about a jump jockey's life. Take me through the process of doing it, the impetus behind it.
Well, it's been a bit of a passion project, actually, for around 3 years. Some close friends of mine who were jockeys, unfortunately, came to suicide in 2019. A good friend of mine called James Banks and a really well-known jockey called Liam Treadwell, who won the Grand National. I'd been through my own struggles with mental health, and through that process, I'd written this short story, and believe me, Sean, I'm not a writer. You know, my English teacher at school would be laughing the fact that Horrocks, that used to stare out the window every day in class, is written something. So, it came through that really, and from that short story became a script, and I showed it to Paul Struthers actually from the Professional Jockeys Association in the UK, and he was very taken with it and said, you know, we need to do something with this, because obviously there's been a real issue with jockeys' mental health, not only in the UK, but around the world, really, you know, because it's something I'd like to highlight is the normal pressures of what jockeys go through, the constant dieting, the traveling, you know, the workload and the pressure of what they're on, you know, because they're all, you know, contractors at the end of the day, you know, freelance workers. So if they don't ride, they don't get paid. And, you know, I know some people might think it's okay for the guys at the top, but there is that middle tier and the lower tier of jockeys that are just, you know, doing it just to get by. And I kind of wanted to show that they're, you know, they're human beings like all sports people are. And the fact that social media has brought an extra pressure to the pressures that they already have, which is, you know, this hate that's been shown after a result. And that's what this kind of film is. This short film is tackling really is this bad day at work, which we all have, but a bad day at work for an athlete or in particular this jockey, it looks a little different to what our normal lives look like. And I kind of wanted to highlight that, need to be holding these social media platforms accountable, and also the people that are sending this hate, you know, texts or tweets to our athletes.
Yeah, you can see that. I mean, that's I know it's everywhere, but certainly in England and Ireland, you see it with the jump jockeys getting abused on social media. We have a little less here, mostly because, a lot of our steeplechasing there's no parimutuel wagering. But for you, I mean, to watch those guys, your friends, and obviously, I mean, I've done it. I know where you're coming from as far as the mental side of being a jockey. So, you know, with the James and Liam on your mind, that's kind of how it got started. And that's what you wanted to kind of bring light to. And I appreciate that. I mean, I think it's something we should talk about. And I guess my question is, you know, how has that been received? And is that something you got to be proud of that to address it?
Yeah, no, it's been overwhelming, actually, the feedback I've had from the film. It's been an enjoyable process, starting the conversation, really, because, you know, sports people are there to be competitors and they can't show weakness. So, they're never able to kind of show that side of themselves, really. So what's been great is the feedback from a lot of jockeys, you know, from the flat weight, you know, changing rooms to the national hunt changing rooms, saying, you know, that's been me, you know, coming back from a bad day at work. And it's great that you've highlighted the fact that, these things happen. But I think the shocking side of things was there's some stats at the end of the movie was showing that there was a study done from a lady called Hannah Walker from Cirencester University in the UK, and 85% of jockeys had received abuse on social media, and 86% of that had been perceived as severe. So there were really high numbers that of showing what these what our athletes are going through. And I'm not saying it's just jockeys that are receiving this; trainers receive it as well, because, you know, they're there to do a job as well. And sometimes the result doesn't go the way our betters expect it to. But I kind of just wanted to highlight the fact that our athletes are human, and we've got to be just a little bit kinder in our ways that we react to certain things.
Yeah, what's your advice? I mean, to jockeys, to anybody who's in the sport or following. And I think this very much goes, it's way beyond just a, I mean, your film is based on a British steeplechase jockey, but it's much more than, I mean, it obviously could be American flat jockeys or American steeplechase jockeys or any athlete, like you said. I mean, anybody who's on the stage or on that platform and a competitor. And I mean, I always laugh, like, you know who makes the most mistakes? The people doing it. Right. You know, like the people who are making decisions, the people who are on stage, the people who are riding the horses, they're the ones who make the most mistakes. So that goes for any athlete, anybody who's putting their neck out there physically and obviously, you know, obviously physical, but also just anytime you're taking a risk and trying something.
Yeah, you know, we see it in all sports. And I think as athletes, they're getting better at this. You know, we've seen it with Naomi Osaka in the, in the tennis. She highlighted the fact that, she's been getting abuse and, especially in this, what we've all been through in the last 2 years, you know, it feels strange that that it's gotten worse, not better, really. You know, we think we'd all act a little kinder to each other. But I think to any athlete, that's starting out in whatever sport they're doing, is that if you are having struggles, and young people do have struggles, you know, because they've not been given the tools yet to deal with this sort of stuff. And, you know, when you start in sport, you start at a very young age, and competing can cause pressure. And some people handle it very, very differently. But I think, you know, being honest with yourself and also being able to have somewhere to go. And, I know in the UK that the Professional Jockeys Association have teamed up with a company called Sporting Chance, which gives an athlete the opportunity to talk to somebody professionally. And also the Injured Jockeys Fund in the UK has also teamed up with Mind, which is another foundation that helps people with mental health. So, and I've had chats with the Guild here in the US as well, you know, about the pressures that are happening to our jockeys here in the US, and they're looking to set something up as well. So it's good that we're talking about it. I think that's the first thing, you know, is talking about it. And I think moving on from there, it's only going to help athletes going forward.
Yeah, and certainly being a jump jockey, I've always said it's like the perfect storm for mental instability, mental anguish, the risk you're taking, the dieting, the constant travel, the constant ups and downs. You're on the stage, and I think it lends itself to you kind of have to have a personality that likes that adrenaline rush, or kind of is interested in that, or kind of, you know, you're kind of accustomed to that. But then that also gives you those kind of ups and downs, and I know when I was riding, it was like you get where you were very much you felt better about yourself when you won a race, and you felt worse about yourself when you lost a race. And it actually meant nothing of who you are, maybe as a jockey, but not as a person. And is that something that you felt over your career? And now with the fall to as your platform, it's very much it is the perfect storm for guys struggling with, guys and girls struggling with it.
It certainly is. And I think we've got to understand, you know, jockeys basically spend more time losing than winning. You know, if they're lucky, it's a 10% to 15% strike rate, you know, and, that you're spending a lot of time losing, and you've got to then come up with a plan of how I'm not going to burn any bridges. You know, it's something that jockeys constantly have to do. They're constantly having to keep their trainer and their owners happy to make sure they keep the ride. And sometimes it's very easy to blame the rider when a horse has run bad. And, I suppose it's the same thing why we've invented, you know, Jockey Cam, which is, you know, going to be used all the way through the Breeders' Cup. It gives the audience the opportunity to see the split decisions and the speed of in which a race unfolds, because those other camera angles don't actually show that all the time. You know yourself, when you're in a race, you've got to make a decision really, really quickly. And I think that's, you know, one of the reasons why we've really pushed that forward. And it's great that it's being used, you know, on larger platforms like, you know, NBC Sports through the Breeders' Cup and Royal Ascot. So people do get to experience what it feels like to ride in a race and see what decisions have to be made.
Well, you've done that very well with Jockey Camp for sure, to give people the view from a jockey's from the saddle, and also obviously with the fall, you've kind of done both. You've shown the action of a race, but also the fall brings you behind those kind of closed doors of what it's like being a jockey. And I guess watching it, you could tell. I mean, I knew you directed it, but if I didn't know and somebody said, watch this, I would have said a jockey directed this because of the way you handled it. Even just the guy, he gets in his car and he can't shut his door because he's hurt his arm. For me, I always fell on my left shoulder. And obviously here in America, obviously you're driving on the left side. And I remember so many times you curl in that car and you have to reach over with your right arm and shut the door and then turn, and you did that so well. I mean, so I guess as a right, or a director, to write and direct something that you know that well had to be, I guess it's easier in a way, I guess, or is it? I mean, what the process of doing it?
Well, it's a great question, Sean, because authenticity was key for me to this. If I'm going to put something out there that feels, is meant to be authentic, it better be authentic, right? Daniel Thrace, who plays our main character, Tom, is... took us 40 auditions or 45 auditions to find him, because jockeys, sports people are always on the front foot. They've always got a goal. They've always got somewhere to be, And Daniel had that in him. And what was lovely about what Daniel did to kind of get into the character of this person was the hiding putting on a face, basically putting on a mask. I'm fine, I'm okay. That's the thing that we always do. I'm not hurt. I'm of course I can ride next week. I'm going to be okay. And he did a great job of that. And I think what he did well from that, his own experience, was taking the experience of being an actor, of what that feels like, going to auditions and not getting the part, right, or getting sacked from a job. He took that into play with, it's very similar to a jockey's life. And he did a great job of that. And Robert Bathurst, who was well known in the UK for a few TV shows, Downton Abbey, and which I know some US audiences will know, but he was in a great show called Cold Feet, and he was great, who helped me co-direct this, and it was great that he could help me develop those characters. And it was important that we got the authenticity of the racing side of things, but also the human side. And I think that's where things worked out well for us, really.
Well, and you really nailed the and it's hard to articulate, but the speed and the quietness of a race, the helter skelter of a race, but also that removal of when you're riding a race, you're so far from that, from the crowd. But it's like one of those places where it's so hard to describe. It's like, and you'll never replicate it in anything you do in life again. But it's like it's a race. You're going so fast, but it's also going so slow. And it's like quiet and loud all at the same time. And you did that very well with Mike Catterall's his commentary, and then the fall, and just that then it's like that silence, and that to me was so authentic. It was so beautifully done.
Yeah, I kind of call it a mind silence. I remember, you could always, hear the footsteps, the hooves hitting the ground, but you couldn't really hear the crowd. It's funny, riding at the big festivals, you never hear the crowd. You just hear the moment that you're in, your horse galloping and yourself pushing, your own breathing. So I kind of really took that experience into this sound, and the sound in this was key, really, to really put the audience in the mind of this athlete, because he was going through a turmoil. He's been put in this, like a washing machine of memories, that flashbacks and things of, this is torture, really, of his mind. And the sound was the best way of doing that, really, and helping the visuals. But I think the key thing was authenticity. And it's great that, the racing community has taken it on board and said, this has been made by someone from our sport. And, that's a big compliment, really, and which I've taken.
No doubt. You deserve that. What would James Banks and Liam Trevor, what would they think of this movie?
You know what? I don't know. And the thing is, James and I had some very, very heavy conversations when we were both, going through our own, mental state, at the time. I'd already quit the saddle, but I was going through a divorce. he was having a tough time being a jockey, and yet we weren't being honest with each other. Do you know what I mean? We could tell each other we're struggling. He would spend, you know, most Friday nights sleeping on my couch after the pub or something, you know what I mean? And it was, this is when I was living back in the UK, and it's that thing of, I want to say something, but I can't. So I'm hoping this stops us having another James and another Liam. This will trigger something in somebody to say, right, I need to say something. I have these feelings, and it's getting me down, and I need to do something about it. I need help, and I think that that will be the first step for me. Really, you know, when I pitched this to, you know, to our stakeholders, to, you know, to give me the funding for this, it was, if this film saves one life, it's job done for me, and that's kind of what I want, really.
You couldn't have done that better. And that's the advice for jockeys, would be to talk about it. But what's the advice for us? I mean, the people, I mean, I'm, I own horses and around horses, write about it, obviously. What's advice, or what can you say to us to maybe would help jockeys in their mental state, mental health?
I'm just, you know, just be careful with our actions. Don't be so flippant to, you know, chuck somebody away. You know, we've had this in the UK just recently with a young guy, Kieran Schumark, who's had a real tough time. You know, he's had some drug problems, and he's been very honest about it. But, you know, 10 years ago, he'd have just been thrown away on the rubbish pile. But we've stuck, you know, racing stuck by him, and some owners and some trainers have stuck by him. And now his talent's really showing, and we're just seeing it recently with champion flat jockey Oshie Murphy having some real struggles, and I'm glad he's going to be, you know, getting some help, and has been very vocal about how the pressure of the sport has hindered him. And we keep forgetting that these guys and girls are young people. They haven't been, you know, I said earlier, they haven't been given the tools just yet. So we just probably need to be careful with our actions, and sometimes it just needs a gentle arm around the shoulder rather than a telling off, as I used to get on a regular basis in my time being a jockey.
Yeah, exactly. I've had a few of those myself. Nathan, I can't commend you anything more on your film. It was so beautifully done, and I know from my experience as a jockey, you brought back those memories and those thoughts of the falls and the turmoil and the stress and the struggle of it. I appreciate that you did that. And as a friend and as a colleague, if we can help in any way.
No, thank you, Sean. I really appreciate it. And like I say, you know, we're having the conversation about it. So there we are. We're already starting something. And whoever's listening to this out there, you know, it's, if you're struggling, you know, please, please, please do have a conversation with somebody. You know, don't hold it in. It's not the right way to do it, because it just bottles you up, and then it, you know, can end badly. So please, please, you know, talk about it. And thanks again for having me on the show.
That's Nathan Harkes. He's putting his arm around the jockeys and trying to help them live another day and enjoy what they do.
Thank you.
What a unique visit there. My thanks to Sean and to Nathan for taking time to put that together. You can hear In the Room with Sean Clancy every Saturday on the program at 10 o'clock Eastern. And of course, if you missed any of them, head back to our website and check out our special In the Room page with Sean Clancy. You can listen to all of them at your leisure. It's there at horseracingradio.net. I'm back after a word from the sponsors of In the Room. That's Fanticipate and My Racehorse.
Want to get closer to your favorite stars in racing? Fanticipate is an online auction platform where fans can bid on unique items from their favorite competitors before the gates even open. Compete with other fans to win items from owners, trainers, and jockeys participating in select Breeders' Cup Challenge Series races and more, and take home a piece of the race. Visit Fanticipate.com for more information and to view our live auctions. Own a piece of the action with Fanticipate.
Experience the thrill of racehorse ownership with My Racehorse Microshares. From the team that brought you Kentucky Derby winner Authentic, My Racehorse offers affordable racehorse ownership for less than $100 with no ongoing fees. My Racehorse features top trainers including Todd Pletcher, Steve Asmussen, Richard Mandela, and more, along with a supercharged mobile app that allows you to purchase shares online. Enjoy insider access to your stable and attend exclusive events. Visit MyRacehorse.com and become an owner today. MyRacehorse offers securities only for use in off-race relations. Part of off-race statement. Qualified by the Securities and Exchange Commission under Tier 2 regulation A. They can't give the off-race dealer big pain at MyRacehorse.com.
When I come back, Kurt Becker takes you on a stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times at 12:55 Eastern and a Friday post time of 4:45 Eastern. Don't forget, on March 13th, we have the Grade 3 Maple Leaf Stakes for fillies and mares, and on the 14th, the Grade 2 Autumn Stakes for three-year-olds and up. With racing now through December 4th and plenty of weekend stakes, you are not going to want to miss out on the action at Woodbine. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com.
The Adidas Spring Stallion roster is loaded with classic bloodlines and classic performance.
Oh, the classy point of entry would not be denied.
Dynaformer Zaire Point of Entry, a global sire with black type horses in five countries, and the number one sire of grade one performers in his crop. Multiple grade one winner Shaman Ghost, the best son of Ghost Zapper, whose two-year-olds race this year.
And it's going to be won by Shaman Ghost. He has won the
Silent Name, the only son of Sunday Silence at Stud in North America, and Canada's champion sire 3 years in a row.
Silent Poet in front of the Neoptic, and this one's for you, Martha. Silent Poet's won it.
And the newest addition to the Adina Springs roster, American Guru, from a proven winning family, steeped in tradition, with a strong Mr. Prospector influence on both sides.
But American Guru continues to keep on giving. And American Guru has dominated.
Classic bloodlines, classic performance. Visit AdinaStallions.com.
After an unprecedented year apart, the time has finally come to say, welcome back, fans, to the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Welcome back to the prestige and excitement to witnessing history firsthand. As the world's most majestic athletes look to be crowned champion in 14 thrilling Breeders' Cup races, and over $31 million in purses and awards waits across the finish line. On November 5th and 6th at Del Mar, the Breeders' Cup will welcome it all back. The world's best thoroughbreds, the brightest stars, and the most passionate fans. An experience that's a breed apart. Tickets on sale now at BreedersCup.com/tickets.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. It's Halloween weekend, so we figured there was no better time to look back at the Hall of Fame career of The Witch, a champion filly campaigned by the legendary Calumet Farm in the post-World War II era. Foaled in 1945 in Kentucky as a homebred for Calumet, The Witch made her career debut as a juvenile in April of 1947 at Keeneland, literally next door to where she was born. The result was a stakes victory in track record time, and she used the win as a springboard to capturing the debutante at Churchill Downs during Kentucky Derby week. In all, The Witch would win 8 of 10 starts as a 2-year-old, with her most notable triumph coming against males in the Washington Park Futurity in Chicago. Racing before a crowd of 29,000, The Witch broke the stakes record under jockey Doug Dodson that day, beating, among others, her stablemate and future Triple Crown winner, Citation. Finishing the 1947 racing season with $213,000 in earnings, The Witch ranked as the second richest juvenile in the sport's history. Triangle Racing Publications named her the nation's champion 2-year-old filly, as did Turf and Sport Digest. She even received 4 votes in the ladder poll for Horse of the Year. An ankle injury at the end of the season, coupled with sore shins early in her 3-year-old campaign, meant that The Witch would be raced sparingly in 1948. Still, she won the Ashland Stakes at Keeneland as the 1-5 favorite, and she captured the Modesty Handicap at Arlington Park before a crowd of 25,000. Far from dazzling with her looks, The Witch was described by many observers as short and chunky. But trainer Ben Jones said of the dark brown filly that the key to her success was the fact she never made a mistake. Jockey Doug Dodson agreed, saying that she had perfect manners, no mean streak, and was easy to handle.
Such was the respect for Bewitched that she was the only filly allowed to share top billing with Calumet's other two superstars at the time. She was the letter B in what the press called Calumet's ABC trio, with the others being Armed and Citation. The former ranked as the richest gelding in the sport's history, while the latter was the Triple Crown hero of 1948. And the fact she had beaten Citation gave her a celebrity status all her own. In January of 1949, for example, Hialeah Racetrack ran ads in the Miami Herald with the filly's picture, graced with the statement, "Come to Hialeah this winter and see the filly who beat Citation." As it happened, Bewitched would not need to rest on her laurels from 2 years earlier. Instead, the 1949 season would see her put together some impressive performances, which would lead to another championship title. For example, there was a track record at Churchill Downs, beating males and covering 6 furlongs in 1 minute 10 and 2/5 seconds to break a record which had stood for 13 years. And on August 31, 1949, Bewitched won the Beverly Handicap at Washington Park in Chicago as the even money favorite, covering the 1 mile distance in 1 minute 34 and 2/5 seconds for the fastest mile by a filly or mare in North American history. She carried 125 pounds that day, while the runner-up carried 104. At the end of the year, turf riders voted Bewitched the best handicap mare in the United States for 1949. Still, the performance which most turf riders would call the greatest of her career was yet to come. The date was March 2, 1950, and the site was Hialeah Racetrack in Miami. The event was a handicap test for fillies and mares, and Bewitched would be conceding as much as 26 pounds to her rivals. The distance was 1 1/8. The public sent her to the post as the 3-5 favorite, and Bewitched justified their confidence with a win by 7 lengths in 1 minute 48 seconds flat, just missing the world record by 2/5 of a second and establishing a North American record for a filly or mare at the 9-furlong distance. And still, Bewitched had one more record-setting performance to go. And it would happen the following year, on July 14, 1951, at Hollywood Park. The race was the $100,000 Hollywood Gold Cup. Stablemate Citation would win the race and become the first North American thoroughbred in history to reach $1 million in career earnings. And finishing runner-up was Bewitched, who with that effort would surpass Gallarette as the richest filly or mare of all time with $462,000 in lifetime earnings. Bewitched would be retired from racing 7 weeks later and would head to Lexington for life as a broodmare at Calumet Farm. She only had one foal, however, before her death in 1959. Bewitched won a total of 15 stakes races, set North American records for her sex at 2 distances, and tied or broke track records at still 2 other distances. She won races from 4 to 9 furlongs, and she reigned for 11 years as the richest filly or mare in North American history. She was inducted into Racing's Hall of Fame in 1977. And so, on this Halloween weekend, we remember Bewitched, a champion distaffer who is worthy of being remembered no matter what the time of year. Please join me again next week as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
Another fantastic story. Nobody does it better than Kurt Becker. My thanks to Lane's End and Keeneland for making those possible. And again, much like In the Room with Sean Clancy, you can go back to our website and check out the podcast of each of Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History segments. They are well worth it. Well, the Breeders' Cup is right around the corner, and starting next weekend, you can bet the entire event on TVG. We have been betting with the TVG app for a while now, and no one does horse racing better. If you've never tried it, well, listen up, because I've got a special offer just for you. Right now, TVG is giving new players a 50% bonus on their first deposit. That's right. They're giving you up to $250 in bonus money to bet this week's races. How would you bet with an extra $250? Which horse do you like? Well, whether you like my picks or somebody else's picks, or you want to make your own, just download the TVG app and sign up with the promo code HRRN to claim your deposit bonus. That's TVG and promo code HRRN.
Age and residency restrictions apply. New users only. Must place first qualifying deposit within 15 days of sign up. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 30 days. See terms at TVG.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700.
Stay tuned. When I come back, I ask, they answer. Dale Romans, Tim Wilkin, going to be good. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
The moment we've all been waiting for is here. Racing returns to Keeneland for the fall meet, October 8th through the 30th. And tickets are now available online for pre-purchase. Place your bets during the fall meet anywhere, anytime from your phone with Keeneland Select. New accounts receive $100 back when you wager $200 on the fall meet, plus the standard $100 sign-up bonus. And Keeneland Select members receive free admission to Keeneland. Sign up to wager at KeenelandSelect.com.
This proven son of AP Endy has sired over 50 stakes winners and well over 100 stakes horses. Recent top performers include Search Results, winner of the Grade 1 Acorn Stakes and a hard-fought second in the Kentucky Oaks. Pass the Champagne, runner-up in the Grade 1 Ashland Stakes, plus these standout performers. In the auction ring, his progeny continued to command top dollar. Two-year-olds by Flatter sold up to $625,000. Flatter, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Champions are returning to Gulfstream for the championship meet starting December 3rd until April 3rd. Witness the best thoroughbred racing Wednesday through Sunday with weekly stakes races. Returning for its sixth year this January is the 2022 Pegasus World Cup with world-class racing, delectable cuisine, stunning celebrities, and iconic fashion. New for 2022 is the third graded stakes race, the Pegasus Turf for fillies and mares with a $500,000 purse. Tickets go on sale November 8th. Visit PegasusWorldCup.com to learn more and get tickets.
A five-time graded stakes winning earner of almost $3 million, Airdrie Studs Collected is the all-time leading earner by City Zip. Winner of the Grade 1 Pacific Classic over Arrowgate, Collected also romped by 14 lengths in the Grade 3 Precisionist Stakes, defeating Accelerate. Collected bred full books of quality mares in his first two seasons, and his first crop yearlings will be unveiled at public auction later this summer. Collected stands at Airdrie Stud for 17,500 stands and nurses. Think about it.
Weanling shopping? Buy Maryland breds and take advantage of one of the most innovative programs in the country. Breeders earn a 30% share of purses on all overnight races for Maryland bred horses finishing in the top three, and 15% in all stakes when your Maryland bred finishes in the top three, capped at $100,000. Owners earn a 15% share on all overnight races for Maryland bred horses finishing first, second, or third, and developers get a 15% share on all overnight races for Maryland breds in the top three spots. Visit MarylandThoroughbred.com for details.
This is Wesley Ward. I'm the Conqueror of Royal Ascot. I listen to HRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Howling time with a wide trip so far. Chasing time with five lengths to make up and a quarter mile to go. They're off the turn, back to normal, turning for home. In front by two. Letty's full out. Osborne comes on through. Howling time is there. Chasing time switched way outside for the final furlong and down toward the rail. It's Brondo. Back to normal as to fend off Howling time. Here comes Howling time surging late. Howling time takes the lead now. Back to normal gives way. Osborne up the rail, but Howling time's won it. Howling time from off the pace by length and a half in the end. Osborne was second. It's tight for third. Back to normal for chasing time. Farther back from there, I'm a warlorder, Brondo.
How's that for a little spooky beginning? You know, as we ended last week's show, Dale Romans mentioned that he would be saddling a horse on Halloween tomorrow who just might be the greatest hunch bet of all time. That is his two-year-old son of Not This Time out of a mare, get this, named Werewolf. His name, you just heard, is Howling Time, and he is running tomorrow in the Street Sense Stakes at Churchill. That will be his second career start after that maiden-breaking win that you just heard from Travis Stone. And don't forget, a few weeks ago, Wilkin was talking about seeing a ghost in his house. So that seems like the perfect way to welcome you to a Halloween edition of I Ask, They Answer with trainer Dale Romans, turf writer Tim Wilkin. And guys, I'm going to tell you, we're going to have a lot of fun talking about some Halloween topics later in the show, but I'm going to kick it off and start with a couple of questions that we received from HRN listeners this week. And here's topic one. HRN Nation wants to know, who was the first horse to catch your attention and make you guys fall in love with the sport? Dale, why don't you kick it off for us?
Well, that's a tough one for me because I don't remember seeing the first horse. Like I told you all once before, my mother said when she took me in the barn, I was 9 months old. But I think when I really realized what racing was all about and what drove racing, the Kentucky Derby, it was Seattle Slough. That's the first Derby I ever went to. I was 9 years old. My great uncle took me, and I haven't missed one since. But I just fell in love with Seattle Slough, and I've told this story a million times. So I just followed him everywhere he went, listened to everything you could about him, watched all his races. I've talked to Billy Turner. I got to spend 2 hours in a limousine one time going into Manhattan with Billy Turner. He told me Seattle Slough stories till he was sick of me. So he got sick. And so I called over to the farm. I said, man, I've never really seen him live. Can I come over? And I'd like to see him. They said, come on over. And so I got in the car, drove over. They had him all shined up. Brought him out, stood him in the middle like they do showing him off. I went up and pet him on the neck. And someone grabbed my arm and wouldn't let go. Bit the hell out of me. I said, you don't sure don't like me as much as I like you.
You know, it's funny you bring that up, Dale, because the listener who submitted this question to us on Twitter, he actually said that his story, his favorite horse that got him hooked on the game when he was 7 years old, Seattle Slough. How about that?
Well, that's pretty good, Seattle Slough. And I'm sure that American Pharoah hooked a lot of kids when he came and won the Triple Crown or Justified. But, you know, that's when I realized what a big deal the Derby was and racing was.
Timmy?
Well, when I was growing up in Rochester, New York, I didn't know the difference between a horse and a cow. I mean, it was I was a basketball player. And all through high school, I was a basketball player. But I kind of got hooked a little bit watching Secretary and Triple Crown. And then 5 years later, Seattle Slough was a Triple Crown. And then I'm in college, and I'm still playing basketball. But then I realized I wasn't going to play in the NBA. So in 1978, when Affirmed and Alidar came around, I got really, really hooked on that. And from there, I thought, well, geez, after Affirmed won the Triple Crown, I said, this Triple Crown thing, they're going to have a Triple Crown winner every year. So I just started following the races in the spring, figuring out who was going to win the Triple Crown every year. And, of course, we didn't have another one until American Pharoah. So I would say that my aborted basketball career sent me into horse racing. I became a huge fan, and I decided that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to write about horses because my major was journalism, because there was no math in journalism and I couldn't count to 10. So I became a big fan of Affirmed and Alidar, that rivalry, and that's how I got hooked.
Yeah, I can't relate to those stories of the 1970s, guys. I was 6 in 1977, and I was 7 in 1978. So
yeah, you got to rub it in, don't you?
I cannot relate to those. I can relate to Easy Goer. That was the horse that got me hooked when he won the Travers in 1989. I was along the rail at Saratoga. I was hooked for life, and then Holy Bull came along, and that was it. It was over for me. I was in love with the sport.
Two good ones. I think Easy Goer hooked a lot of people into racing. He just kind of took America by storm, especially New York. I mean, they hated Pat Day outside of New York because for getting beaten the Preakness and the Kentucky Derby. And, you know, Pat Day's my really good friend, and he told me if he had one do-over race to ride, if he could go back and do one race over, it would be the Easy Goer Preakness.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, he'd like to have that one back.
Yeah, yeah. That was, to me, personally, that's the greatest race I've ever seen. I think those were two great jockeys. They were playing each other. They both rode great races. They were two great racehorses, and Sunday Silence and Easy Goer. And I just think if anybody hadn't seen it, it's new to the game, go back and watch that. You will be hooked.
And that's when they say Sunday Silence savaged Easy Goer, right?
Yeah. I don't think he savaged him that day, but they went at it back and forth pretty hard.
I thought he tried to bite him coming down the stretch.
He may have. I don't remember that part, but he may have. But there was some great jockeys and great horses, and that'll make a lot of fans if you just go watch that race.
That was such a great rivalry too, because it was East Coast, West Coast, and it was so divided. You were either Easy Goer or Sunday Silence. There was no in between.
No, and I haven't seen New York behind a horse since or before that like they were Easy Goer. It was just he was New York's horse.
Yeah, I mean, to a lesser extent, maybe Funny Side, and then maybe Rachel Alexandra in the Zenyatta rivalry, maybe a little bit, but not as it wasn't anything near what Sunday Silence and Easy Goer was. That's for sure.
Yeah,
it was good stuff.
All right, one more somewhat serious topic before we dive into our Halloween topics here and have a little fun. You know, oftentimes in racing, when there is an objection or an inquiry, and this, again, came from one of our listeners here via email, officials will take a look at the stretch run, but rarely do we see officials go back to look at what happens at the start of a race. And Bill in New York submitted this question. He wants to know why it seems as if officials tend to overlook the start and not hold riders responsible for serious infractions that might occur at the beginning of races. Timmy?
Well, you know, it's a point that, I mean, I sort of questioned what he was talking about, because if there's something that happens at the start, they usually look at it. I mean, a lot of infractions, they happen, you know, during the running of the race, after the start, and the start could be clean. I think that, if it warrants it, they definitely do look at the start of the races, and they do hold these jockeys accountable if something happens at the start. But, I mean, for the most part, if there's something that happens in the stretch, they're not going to go back and look at the start, because nothing happened at the start to cause the infraction in the stretch.
Well, and you know, he is right about one thing. Right out of the gate, they aren't as hard on the jockeys as they are in the rest of the race. And that's because, I mean, that's a violent thing. If you think about you're taking 1,000 pounds and you're going from 0 to 35 as fast as you can, and they're lunging out of there. And there's a lot of times the jockeys can't, you know, they don't have as much control as they do during the rest of the race. And I don't think early on you see nearly as many infractions. The pace is a little bit slower, and they're just jockeying for some position. Now, I will say, I think it was a bad call if you go back to the Breeders' Cup in California. I can't remember the horse named Baffert's horse. He wiped out half the field.
Byron,
yeah. I think that he did that to take an advantage. I really thought they would take him down, but they didn't. But they do give him a little leeway the first 10 jumps out of the gate or so, because it's a tough thing for a horse to do, and I think that's probably where the jockey has the least control of any time during the race. Now, I do think that they've made the worst call I ever saw in racing, I thought, was this year at Saratoga. When Tim, you have to help me with the horse's name in the race, but the filly from the outside broke through the gate, and she had yeah, half her head outside the gate before the rest of the gates opened, and they left her as a starter. There's no way she should have been considered a starter.
I remember that. I can't remember the name of the race of the horse either, but that was something that I think people are still talking about. That was a blown call for sure. There's no doubt about that. I don't know how the stewards did not take action on that one.
Right, and there's no question the horse left against gate early. Now, I think their justification was it didn't give her really an unfair advantage, but it may have hampered her when she hits her head and pushes the gate open her own self, and then the jockey's trying to take a hold of her, right? I don't think it was an advantage. I think it was a disadvantage and an unfair disadvantage to the people who backed her. She was 4-5 and ended up getting beat.
And back to this listener's question, I think that was the exact point. And, Timmy, maybe I didn't ask it 100% correctly here, but, yeah, I think that's one of the things that this listener brought up, was that many of the infractions can tend to totally eliminate a horse's chances at the very beginning of a race. And the argument that, okay, horses have the whole race to recover from what happens at the start really doesn't hold a lot of water, right?
Yeah. You know, you look at the start of every race, there's probably something that goes on, and it's like, if it's something that doesn't cause a colossal problem. I mean, it's almost like traveling in basketball. They could probably call it every time they come down the floor, but they're not going to call every foul on this. If it isn't anything that's really, really egregious, maybe they're just going to let it go.
Yeah, I think there's a little more leeway leaving the gate, but I do agree. In the first turn is where I think you start seeing some infractions that could be called, maybe aren't. There's some things go on in the first turn. Out of the gate, I agree with give them a little bit of leeway, especially in young horses. But around the first turn in a route race, you'll see sometimes some things that probably could be questioned. But, you know, another question, the question back to the question is, why don't more jockeys call for a race to be looked at? I mean, most inquiries are jockey related. They got the right to do it right after the race. And you don't see many jockeys claim foul in the, for something that happens early on in the race.
Yeah, it's
interesting. And I still think the jockeys just don't get enough credit for what they do.
Not at all. Not at all. They're the greatest athletes in the world. You think about it, these guys that put, and women, that put their toes in the irons and they get in a squatted position, and their hands completely balanced on three toes in that squatted position, going 35 miles an hour, in a pack, and pelted with dirt, and we expect to pace and look for holes, and then we catch them when they don't. I read a good article one time when I was a kid that talked about nobody gets really mad if a guy strikes out or misses a last second shot, because a lot of us played basketball or played football or baseball. None of us were jockeys, so we can't relate. And it's they're pound for pound the greatest athlete in the world.
Have you ever tried to do that? Have you ever tried to sit there on like an equisizer and balance yourself on your toes and squat down like that for about a minute and a half? Have you ever tried that?
The only time I ever tried it, I was a little bit impaired to begin with, so it wouldn't have worked.
Well, there was years ago at Saratoga, when they used to have the open house at Saratoga, someone came up with the brilliant idea to have a media race with real horses coming out of the starting gate. I mean, they were retired racehorses. I mean, I did it once, and I still think I should have my head examined for that. We actually went into the starting gate on a thoroughbred. A retired thoroughbred, and they used the starting gate. They had the starters there and all that, and they had the bell go off, and these horses took off like they were, you know, went back to their days of being a racehorse, and they were competing again. And I've never been as terrified as I was when they broke out of the gate. We only went like an eighth of a mile, but I mean, I was just, one of the TV guys up here fell off the horse, went over backwards, broke his arm. I mean, it was like it was the nuttiest, craziest thing the New York Racing Association ever did.
And yeah,
They did it a couple years. I did it once, and then I retired. So I have one start in my career. I think I finished eighth.
Definitely don't try that at home. Absolutely not. All right, moving on. I want to get to these other Halloween topics here to have a little fun. We're down to about the final 5 minutes in the show. Let's go to this one. Howling Time, who Dale is going to saddle tomorrow at Churchill, we heard that call earlier in the show, is out of that mare Werewolf, and a fantastic name for a horse running on Halloween. Give me your top three Halloween horse names of all time. Dale?
Well, I think Howling Time has to be number one. I think I didn't see that question on our list, so I can't come up with two more. I'm going to pass it off to Timmy.
How about Spooky Mulder? Remember Spooky Mulder?
I remember him.
Spooky Mulder, I do remember.
Yep.
But the obvious ones would be like Ghost Zapper, She Dares the Devil. Remember Devil is Due that ran for Alan Jerkins back in the day?
Alan Jerkins.
Yeah.
Sorry.
The ones that I came up with, there's a whole bunch of them named for Pumpkin. Pumpkin Pie, Pumpkin Spice, Pumpkin Rumble, Pumpkin Express. But my three... I have Spooky Channel, one of like three grade ones at the Halloween prices of like 36 to 1, 7 to 1 for two of them. Silver Goblin, won the Razorback at Oaklawn in 94. Devil's Bag, won the Derby trial his last race, 8 for 9 for Woody Stevens. But I think the all-time best one would be Native Dancer, even though, you know, that's not a Halloween name, but his nickname, the Gray Ghost, is the greatest nickname of all time. 121 to 22. He's my number one, the Gray Ghost Native Dancer.
Yep.
You can tell who prepares for the show better than the best.
What are you talking about? This is all the top of my head.
Yeah, okay.
You're not buying that, huh?
No, not buying that.
Damn. Which Halloween movie character is scarier? Michael Myers, Freddy Krueger, or is there somebody else?
I'm going Michael Myers.
It's easy. Because Freddy Krueger was in your dreams. He didn't even exist.
Right. Michael was a real fella. He was a tough little guy.
Yeah, Michael Myers, I mean, he walked around. He didn't say anything. He had that big old knife. And you couldn't kill him.
No, nope, I mean, he's still going.
And how many times? I mean, Freddy Krueger. I mean, he was almost comical. Those little knives he had in his hand. I mean, if you stayed awake, he wasn't going to bother you.
Chucky freaked me out too.
Yeah, he's what? real. What about Damien?
Oh yeah.
Oh, the Omen. Yeah,
that was a pretty good one.
Yeah, you don't want to mess with the devil, right?
No, you don't. Don't keep him quiet.
What about that guy with at the lake, Jason, the guy with the hockey mask?
Oh yeah, yeah. I don't want to run into him
mean.
Either. Who's the one person? Who's the one person in racing you wouldn't want to run into in the dark?
Sammy Fox. That's happened a few times when she was mad.
Did you run into her in the dark?
Yeah, well, she seems to track me down.
Well, I can't say that I would be afraid of anybody in the dark unless it's a mean horse. But although I wouldn't want to tick off Dale and have to run against him in the dark. I've heard some stories about him when he gets a little angry.
I only had a couple of your colleagues.
Yeah, I think Mike Maker would be one that I wouldn't want to meet just because he's so quiet normally, and he'd sneak right up on you anyway.
You wouldn't know he was there.
No.
Maybe he's like the Michael Myers of horse racing. He never speaks.
Yeah.
All
right, guys, we're about out of time on this show. We're back next week, another brand-new edition. Dale will be in California at Breeders' Cup. Timmy, you'll be back here. I'll be back here. We'll get it all organized, and looking forward to talking with you guys next week on I Ask, They Answer.
All right, talk to you later, Phil.
Sounds good. Guys. Be good on Halloween now.
Absolutely. All right, I Ask, They Answer. Dale Romans, Tim Wilkin, you can listen to the segment every single week. And if you missed it, by the way, on our show, all you have to do is go back to the website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast. I'm back to wrap it up right after this. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Thoroughbred Charities of America raises and distributes funding to approved nonprofits that help thoroughbreds and the people who care for them. TCA's annual grants support aftercare and incentive programs, health and human service initiatives for backstretch and farm workers, and equine-assisted therapy programs that utilize thoroughbreds. TCA is one, helping many. Please support TCA today at tca.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
To be able to go back to the movies.
Introduce my family to my new girlfriend.
For my husband, who's been a chronic asthmatic his whole life.
So I can visit friends in a different state.
So I can take my granddaughter out to the park again.
So that I can hug my 85-year-old grandma again.
We each have our own reason for why we're getting vaccinated against COVID-19. What will yours be? Visit getvaccineanswers.org for information on the COVID-19 vaccines. It's up to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Joe Buck and John Smoltz welcoming you back to the City Center Convenience Mart. Well, John, the stage is set for the final transaction.
That's right, Joe. Heather's moment has arrived, and you just hope all that training pays off.
Heather lays down her purchase, but Randy rings it up as slowly as he can.
He is a wily veteran.
It gives Heather's eyes the chance to wander.
Uh-oh.
Yep, she's looking at the cigarettes.
There's nothing good back there. Quit now, and in 5 years, your odds of getting certain cancers drop 50%.
Meanwhile, Randy's stone-faced. He's giving nothing away. He just stands there, wetting his cashier's finger on that sponge.
Heather toes the rubber.
Here we go. Heather's arm is in motion. But instead of pointing at the back wall, she just grabs the gum off the counter.
That's a slick move.
Heather, back, back, back. She is out of there. Even Randy tips his cap to Heather. Stand Up to Cancer and Rally wants you to reduce your risk for cancer.
Go to TakeAHealthyStand.org.
HRRN is your exclusive home for the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Tune in on Friday, November 5th, beginning at 5:30 p.m. Eastern. And Saturday, November 6th, beginning at 3 p.m. Eastern, for total coverage of every Breeders' Cup race, live from Del Mar. the Breeders' Cup World Championships on HRRN. Hear it on Sirius 219, XM 201, and streaming live online at horseracingradio.net.
I'm three-time Derby winning jockey Gary Stevens.
This is Rosina Pravnik.
Hi, my name is Sean Bridgman.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia, and I'm listening to Horse Racing Radio.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Well, be sure to follow all the Breeders' Cup news and stories, plus entries, results, race replays, sales coverage, industry news, and more with Blood Horse Daily, awarded as the best equine-related publication by the American Horse Publications for the second year in a row. You can have this newsletter delivered to your email each evening, and here's the best part. It is free. Sign up and view today's Blood Horse Daily at bloodhorse.com/daily. And, of course, the November issue of Blood Horse Magazine features 154 pages with so many unbelievable stories and features you'll have to check out. All right, well, my thanks to all the guests for making this show possible here this morning, and it has been a busy show. We've covered a lot of ground for you. Darren Rogers, Director of Communications at Churchill Downs, previewing opening day tomorrow and the upcoming meet. Max Pimlott was here from the International Racing Bureau talking about the European runners who have pre-entered into the Breeders' Cup, and some great insight from Max there. Elizabeth Ovalman from Fanticipate talking about their auctions benefiting Breeders' Cup charities. Unsung Heroes, presented by Claiborne. Robert Turner, the yearling manager at Stone Street Farm, paid a visit to us there, and it was great to recognize him and his contributions to the sport. Hall of Fame trainer Steve Asmussen walked through all of his pre-entered Breeders' Cup horses. There are six of those. He was here to do it. And Nathan Horrocks, former jockey, now film producer, joined Sean Clancy for In the Room. My thanks to him. And to Kurt Becker for his stroll through racing history. And, of course, Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin. I ask, they answer, just a few minutes ago. If you missed any portion of the show, head to our website, horseracingradio.net, to check out the podcast at your leisure. And, of course, get ready to kick things off for the Breeders' Cup with our Breeders' Cup countdown shows coming your way Tuesday morning, the first of three, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific. They're all presented by Hillendale Farms. You can go to horseracingradio.net to check out our entire Breeders' Cup week schedule. Now for my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studio. For Chauncey, handling all of our social media, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week. And as always, bring on the Browns. Go Steelers.